Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first of our budget hearings for the week of the 13th. If you'd all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd appreciate that. Please say with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very appropriate, seeing how this is Flag Day, I believe. Okay, Madam Clerk.
Yes, added items on closed session under pending litigation. Conference with legal counsel existing litigation is 1, Cine Acres Incorporated versus the County of San Luis Obispo, 2, Cantinas Ranch LLC versus the County. Under conference with legal counsel, significant exposure, there are 2 cases, facts and circumstances. Initiation of litigation, the number of cases are 2. Number 2, conference with labor negotiator. The board will meet in closed session to confer with its management representative concerning the following organizations: LOSIA Public Services, Supervisors, Clerical, 6, Deputy Sheriff's Association, 7, DAIA, 8, LOSIA Trades and Crafts, 9, Sheriff's Management, 10, LOCPS, Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs, 11 is DCCA. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, ma'am. With that, I'm going to have public comment at this point, and I have a number of requests to speak, so I'll call you up 2 at a time, and then we'll, after we get through the public comment, we'll start delving into the budget. First up will be Andy Caldwell, followed by Eric Greening.
Chairman Meacham, is this public comment on overall budget or general public comment?
General public comment, but...
Okay, I had put it down. There's a note that there's going to be a public comment on overall budget, so that's what I was going to do.
Yeah, we'll get to that one then. Do you want to wait for that?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Mr. Greening?
Thank you.
And Kim Daniels.
Mine was going to be basically overall budget, but there's one part of it that I think maybe fits now. So I am Eric Greening, and given the larger state and federal context of this whole thing, and particularly the state context and the shoe that we're waiting for to drop, I would just like to point out to all of us, as you know, I tend to advocate for a strong lobbying position on these issues where we are dealing with the symptoms, and you're going to be dealing with a lot of symptoms for the next 3 days of fundamental lack of leadership at other levels. But we have an unusual, unique opportunity, all of us, not just you, but all of us in this room, all of us in this area have a unique opportunity right now. There are a couple of tentative budget plans out there in front of the legislature. There's the governor's proposal, the governor's May proposal. There is the Democratic Party proposal. They may both need some tweaking based on the $2 billion or more of Medicaid money that won't go from the feds to the state level. But in any event, they are two very distinct models of the direction in which we might go. And we, in this state senatorial district, have the unusual opportunity that the eyes of the entire state and the entire state legislature will be on the voters of this senatorial district in relation to the direction that we send. We may be able to empower one or the other of those alternatives by the choices we make, both in perhaps a person being seated in the Senate if someone gets 50% plus one on June 22nd, and just in the general temperature taking of the electorate that the people of this district have the opportunity to be the example that everyone is looking at. So I would simply urge everyone, do not ignore or neglect this very low-profile election that's sneaking up on us next week. Typically, a special election gets an extremely low turnout, But given the importance of what's at stake, which could be setting the direction for the whole state and its impacts on all of us, I would encourage everyone to be very present at this election and to pay close attention to the signals we're giving as well as the character of the people running. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. The remainder of the public comments that I have are all related to the budget from what I'm gathering here, so we'll hold those for a few moments. Mr. Grant.
Thank you. Jim Grant, County Administrator. Mr. Chair, members of the board, today we're here to discuss the fiscal year 2010-11 budget, and we're having budget hearings over the next, at least scheduled over the next 2.5 days. The budget in general, unfortunately, is another difficult one. We spent a lot of time and effort, and sweat and some tears with department heads in crafting a budget that we feel is very responsible. We've had great communications with our department heads in crafting this budget, but the budget itself continues to reduce local government spending, utilizing a multi-year approach that will bring the budget into structural balance over the next couple of years. So even though this will be the third year of our budget strategies, we have a few more years to go, we believe, until we get into structural balance and everything becomes what we fashioned, coined the new normal. And that means a lower, smaller, more efficient budget overall for county government. The end result is a smaller county government with fewer employees and reduced service levels to the community. Again, it's responsible, a budget that does close a $17 million budget gap, utilizing multiple reduction strategies, which we'll talk about in a little bit, guided by the county's mission, vision, and your board's policies, budget policies and priorities. As Mr. Greening mentioned, the budget before you today does not incorporate the full impact of the state budget. That has yet to be determined. We think that at the state level that will go on for many months until we actually get an answer to that. It is with certainty, though, I can tell you that we will be returning to your board in a few months to make additional cuts and revisions once the state budget is finalized. There's no doubt about it. It's happened in the last few years. It will continue to happen until the state gets a grip on their financial crisis. So our budget journey doesn't end on Wednesday. It's the first leg of quite the fiscal adventure that we'll go through probably for the entire next fiscal year. But we are hopeful that over the next few years that the economy is going to stabilize and we reach that new normal that I mentioned. In the meantime, you know, we encourage everyone to look for efficiencies at the staff level, at the department head level, and to continue to look for ways, new ways of doing business by incorporating new and innovative ideas, by being more efficient, and partnering when possible. So there's a lot of ideas, a lot of things that are starting to take place and getting traction in terms of looking at ways we can do things in a better fashion with a smaller budget and fewer employees. So that concludes my opening remarks, but if we'll go to the next slide here, we do have a few housekeeping items, and then Mr. Buckshaw will present the overview and the budget details. This is just our high-tech pictorial view of how things are shaping up. And this current year, our budget pie basically is bigger than it will be next year. And if you look back in the past year at 08-09, the pie was even larger then. So this is the extent of which we can provide services to the constituents, and each year it continues to shrink. So we're trying to do more with less, and I think to some degrees that is working. But again, we're just going to be a smaller outfit as we go through the next couple of years. So how does it all shape up for the budget hearings? Today, we've started the hearings. We will. There is a closed session that is possible today that has been advertised for today, and we'll see how that works. We'll adjourn it at 5 o'clock. If we need to continue the hearings tomorrow, we'll start again at 9 o'clock. If we need another closed session, we'll have that, and then they'll adjournment again. Wednesday is the contributions to outside agencies, and that usually lasts only a few hours in the morning. And then we've advertised a closed session and then adjournment, and the budget hearings would conclude until the next week when the board adopts the actual budget resolution. Next slide. So our overview has been given. We're going to have public comment on that overall overview in a few moments, or maybe after Mr. Buckshy finishes his presentation so that we get all the information out there. And then the board will review and tentatively approve all of the budgets by functional area, such as land-based budgets that come up first. There is public comment during each of those functional areas, so the public will have a chance to come up and comment on that block of budgets, and then the board will consider the changes, board consideration, changes if you like, and then tentative approval. Next is the order of review, the way it's structured in the budget book itself. We have the land-based areas, public protection, health and human services, community services, fiscal and admin, support to county departments, financing, capital projects, and then contributions to outside agencies. We'll do a quick overview of the state budget update. We also have a supplemental document, budget document, that was prepared after the proposed budget was put together. Those are any technical changes that occur within the budget units and anything that's called at issue, something that a department wants to discuss further than it has been in the budget document itself. We only have one at issue item right now. It's from planning, actually two items from planning on two employees or positions that are scheduled to be eliminated. Talk a little bit about budget framework, the summary of the numbers, and recommendations and next step. The state budget, very quickly, $19 billion gap. There are three versions out there right now. The governor's version that deals basically with decimating some of the health and human services areas. If that occurs, and such as CalWORKs, the welfare to work program, is eliminated, what that does for the county government is it puts all of those displaced folks on county general assistance, which would mean that the county would be on the hook rather than the state or the federal government on the hook for helping those folks, probably at the tune of somewhere between, I think, $9 and $10 million in that neighborhood. It's a huge issue, and we're hopeful that will not occur, but at this point we don't know. We have a Senate Democrats version that really just carries through some taxes over and above what they're doing now. It adds to the vehicle license fee a little bit. It continues on some taxes that were scheduled to go away. It solves around $5 billion worth of the $19 billion gap, so it probably deserves some recognition and credit, but it has a long way to go before anything like that will ever happen. And then we go to the Assembly Democrats version, which basically they continue the borrowing practice that they've done over the years. So they would be borrowing about $8 billion from a recycle fund that would help during, probably, you know, if I want to be a little critical, it helps during an election year. It solves some of their problems, but it won't help the next year after that at all, because that money won't be available. So all said and done, we have no idea where they're going to end up. We do think there's going to be some a bit of give and take in all of these, and probably some version of continuing the taxes, and then maybe some borrowing, and then reduction of services will occur. But we have no idea, and we think that won't occur until probably in August sometime at the earliest. So we think it's prudent to go ahead with our budget today. We are balanced. We are ready to go. We will have to come back and deal with those issues at a later date, but we've done that consistently over the years, and it's worked for us, so I would continue to recommend that we use this a similar approach today. So, Mr. Buckshy? Oh, wait, a couple of other items. I just wanted to reinforce the county's vision, and something that we use when we're looking at crafting the budget in terms of how do we make it work with our dwindling resources? Well, we look at the safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, well-governed communities, and we try to fashion a budget that we think does the best job under these difficult budget circumstances to live within that. We also take a look at the county mission statement, which is the county's elected representatives, employees are committed to serve the community with pride in order to enhance economic, environmental, and social quality of life in San Luis Obispo.
I would say that our budget succeeds on all of those levels to the degree that it can, again, under these difficult times. So with that.
Well, Mr. Buckshy, also if we could possibly incorporate some of the United States representatives over in Afghanistan, if they could find the $1 trillion of precious minerals under San Luis County, it would solve all of our problems. Mr. Buckshy.
Okay, good morning. Dan Buckshy from the Administrative Office. I'm going to start things off with a brief overview of the supplemental budget. As Mr. Grant noted, the proposed budget was introduced to your board back on May 18th. And to the public for about a month of review prior to budget hearings. And since that time, there have been some changes, some new information that's become available. And most of the changes are technical adjustments, new information. You see here there are 16 of those for a total of just under $1.5 million. Two items comprise almost all of that money. There's $700,000 being added for three new roads projects. There is not any general fund money associated with that. And there's $600,000 associated with money for the school districts that is required to pass through the health agency in order for them to receive this type of reimbursement from the state. Those two comprise about $1.3 million of that $1.5 million. Minor amount of general fund support being added, basically to correct an input error into the system, and two positions are proposed to be added. Again, no general fund support associated with those. We do have two at-issue items that we'll speak to in a little more detail when we get into the land-based portion of the budget. These are related to the Planning and Building Department and our request to add back a building inspector three-quarter time and add back a code enforcement official at three-quarter time as well. So dig into the framework. Some information we've reviewed earlier this year as well over the last couple years since these fiscally difficult times have become upon us. So diving in, we are in year three of what we've coined the five-year pain plan. Obviously, we have a $17 million gap that the proposed budget closes, and this is on the heels of an $18 million and $30 million gap. We do believe 11-12 will be difficult as well, and as Mr. Grant noted, 12-13, we're hoping. I think this is actually still a bit optimistic, but we're hoping that 12-13 is the new normal, which the new normal is an era in which revenues are essentially flat or growing very slowly. The days of double-digit revenue growth are believed to be long over, which means that in order to remain in balance and not have to further cut programs and services, that expenditures will need to remain relatively flat. Given that labor costs comprise over 65% of our budget, it's imperative that labor costs remain in check. And so staff and your board is continuing to work with the employee associations in order to try to do that as best as possible in order to preserve jobs. The assumptions that we looked at, as you can see here, we think we're near the bottom. It's difficult. The crystal ball is a little murky. We don't know if we've hit bottom, if we're still on the way down, if we have picked up off the bottom a bit, but essentially think we're near it. That being said, revenue projections for the first half of 2009-10 continued to plummet. The second half, the rate of decline has slowed. I wouldn't say that we're flat yet or that we're increasing, but the rate of decline has slowed. And so we used the latter half of 2009-10 as the foundation for the projection heading into 10-11, so we are relatively flat. An important point, we did only build in a 4% general fund contingency again this year. This is the third year in a row in which this has been done. Standard board policy is for a 5% contingency, but given the current circumstances, it was a conscious decision by your board as part of the budget balancing strategies to scale that back to 4%. And then again, just to emphasize, the state budget impacts that are looming out there are not included at this point. The approach, we've reviewed this again, is really to strike the balancing act between preserving programs and services that are important to our community and sound fiscal management. During the boom times, this balancing act was not nearly as difficult, but unfortunately it seems as if they're somewhat inversely related these days. The approach is multi-year approach, and we're going to try to soften the impact of some of the expenditure cuts by using some short-term options. Again, the long-term options, we've reviewed these in the past, but the budget is based upon your board's priorities. It is not an across-the-board, cut-everything-the-same type budget as done by some organizations. All departments are participating to one degree to another. Some may be having further reductions than others, but all are participating. You can see that mid-year reductions have been necessary, proportional reductions, those departments that grew more when there was revenue, if that revenue sense drop, they're being reduced to reflect the reduction in demand and the reduction in revenue. The overmatch, we've talked about that with scaling back state programs where the state funding is no longer available, and again, a very conscious effort to engage the employee associations to help solve the challenges in which we find ourselves. Short-term options, we've had a hiring freeze in place since October of 07. We're sneaking up on 3 years. Every hiring request needs to go to the CAO personally for review and approval. Given that, we've not done nearly the level of hiring as we've done in the past. General fund contingency has been scaled back, and we're deferring capital and infrastructure projects and upgrades in order to save some money. In the near term, recognizing longer term, we will need to do this eventually, because as we all know, that the longer you defer maintenance, the more it costs down the road, and we don't want to find ourselves in a situation that's unmanageable. Reducing the organizational development, this is the funding that is used primarily to fund the employee university for employee training. We're using reserves as opposed to general fund. And reallocating the depreciation, again, this is the third year in a row in which we've done a number of these activities. As mentioned, the budget does comply with your board's priorities, or at least attempts to do so. And we do, first and foremost, meet all legal mandates. That is an important point. We are in compliance with law. And additionally, we should meet all of our debt service requirements according to the budget. We're planning to make those and keep our creditors whole, which the bond rating agencies certainly appreciate. And then lastly, public safety is defined by the four departments, as you can see here, the third highest priority. Digging into the numbers a bit, you can see all funds are down about $35 million, or 5.5%, and the general fund is down about $5 million, or a little over 1% as compared to the current 09-10 fiscal year. Bigger picture, a little longer term, over the 3 years in which we've been dealing with the economic crisis, the overall budget, this is the total county budget, is down about 10% or $50 million. That is a considerable amount of money in a relatively short period of time. So looking at, again, the status quo, $17 million gap. What we define status quo is essentially continuing doing what we're doing. It does not include the addition of any new programs or services, and it does not include the deletion. And as a result of that scenario, we found ourselves with a $17 million gap. After some actions were taken, this is an important point, the gap was at about $25 million, and numerous actions were taken, the first by the pension board. A pension rate increase of about 4% was first proposed late summer, early fall. And the pension board took some actions to do some additional smoothing, spread out the investment losses of 2008, to reduce that to about a 1%, just under a 1% rate. That saved, as you can see here, about $4 million. The Auditor Controller's Office took the initiative to look at different ways to invest retiree health care costs, if you will. OPEB stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits, which are essentially retiree health. That saves about 30% or $800,000. Workers' Comp continued great progress in that program, an additional $1.5 million of reduced cost due to avoiding injuries and getting people back to work sooner than what we were doing a few years ago. We saved millions of dollars over the last 4 or 5 years. And then primarily the General Services Agency and, again, the Risk Management Department in terms of insurance charges is insurance charges are down about 15% or $2 million. So as part of it's related to the fact that the overall government number of employees has shrunk, so our internal costs shrunk, and additionally it's related to efficiencies and improvements in programs and operations that have allowed us to do that as well. Again, digging into the numbers of the $17 million in which we found ourselves after those other actions were taken, about a quarter of that amount was closed with short-term solutions, which I'll speak to in a moment, and the other 12.5 were closed with ongoing expenditure reductions. The short-term, about $2 million of reserves, then reducing maintenance, redirecting depreciation, as previously mentioned, no general fund has been allocated to the organizational development program. This chart's a bit of an eye chart, and I apologize for that, but this takes a look at the cumulative impact of the short-term options that have been used over the last 3 years. And the bottom line, if you look in the lower right corner, we're about $22 million worth of short-term solutions cumulatively. And as you can see, we're slowly tapering that back. The idea when we get to 12-13 is to utilize zero at that point in time, and the target is for 11-12 to scale it down from $4.5 million to something roughly half of that. But, you know, obviously this is $21 million that could have been used for other things, but we've used it to help soften the impact of expenditure reductions, and very consciously so. Implications, as we discussed, this is the third year. All the any low-hanging fruit has since long been picked, and well, I'm reluctant to use the word easier. The easier solutions have been implemented. I don't think anything's really been easy by any stretch of the imagination. And the impact of the workforce is significant. It's approximately a 10% reduction over these 3 years. For the most part, these positions have been vacant, which is good news. We've been able to handle it through attrition. Depending what happens with the at issue item for planning and building, it's very possible for 10-11 that there would be no new layoffs, that these would all be vacant positions. And as your board may recall, in 09-10, we were looking at about 40 layoffs. We had eliminated about 140 positions, of which about 40 were filled. And there was a deal struck with SLOSIA, the employee association, for them to defer their COLA. And in return, the layoffs would be deferred for a year. That year is coming up on June 30th. The number has been reduced from 40 to about 4 FTE. So unfortunately, there are still a few left, but obviously a tenfold reduction. The number of people is a few more because it's a lot of quarter-time and half-time positions. But from a full-time equivalent, we're looking at about 4 positions in total at this point in time. But again, for 10-11, no additional layoffs at this point. We hit the 10-year broader trend. We've hit the high point of staffing in 02-03 at about 2,700, and we're down to an even 2,400 in this proposed budget, so about 300 or roughly 10% of the workforce over that point in time. So concluding the wrap-up, the overview portion, the recommendations are to consider the supplemental budget as you consider the proposed budget. Once the hearings are concluded, to direct staff to prepare resolutions reflecting the changes made by your board. And the last point, we've done this the last 2 years. Staff's recommending you do this again is authorize the Auditor Controller's Office to make loans between funds for cash flow purposes. And this is to offset any potential impacts from the state. It's very likely one of the state's strategies will be to defer payments in addition to any cuts they make, but actually defer money they owe us, which could impact our cash flow situation. So we want to allow ourselves to have some flexibility to make internal loans to cover that so that we wouldn't have to go and borrow money externally, such as some other counties and cities have been required to do. After budget hearings, a week from tomorrow, staff would bring back the resolutions to reflect all of these changes and formally then close budget hearings at that point in time. Fiscal year begins on July 1st, and then the auditor closes the books in early August, and we would come back to your board around September time frame with final year-end numbers, adjusting for any year-end changes. Right now, we've had to make some assumptions and projections about how the 09-10 fiscal year will end, and we'll know for certain in early August how that looks. Then lastly, and as always, I'd like to acknowledge everybody who's put a lot of effort into this activity. This year, again, was a very difficult year, and I think, you know, one of the silver linings, if you will, is that I think the county, various departments and employees have come together more so than in the past during these difficult times to help work together to try to solve these problems, which is certainly much appreciated. And that concludes my overview.
Mr. Grant?
Yes, at this point in time, Mr. Chair, you may want to have public comments on the budget, and then we'll proceed into the actual hearings themselves.
I have a couple questions, I think, from the board at this point, so we'll, my colleagues wanted to ask Mr. Buckshire or Mr. Grant. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Buckshire, just a couple of quick questions, if I could. On your chart, when you looked at our five-year pain plan and we look at the next fiscal year, 11-12, and improve but difficult, any sense of when actual projections will come forward in terms of how much of a deficit? I know a lot of it is contingent upon the state, unfortunately, at this point, but do you have a sense of when those projections?
Yeah, if we we adhere to the schedule that we've been using last year or two, it would be October.
Okay.
We wait until the fiscal year books close in August so that we can get more updated information with actual figures that help, and then we'll come back to your board with specific numbers at that point in time.
Okay. And on one of our strategies that we've been using is the reallocating accumulated depreciation. I wonder if you could comment a little bit more on that in terms of how, because when you look through some individual departmental budgets and we see how this may impact how we're going to come back to that, I guess, once we're in our new normal stage?
Yeah, that's a good question. Essentially how that works, the Auditor Controller's Office, as part of the countywide overhead or cost allocation plan, calculates how much money should be set aside for depreciation to help maintain and replace buildings in future years. And typically we put that aside into reserves and then use that for capital upgrades and such. At this point in time, over the last 3 years, we've allocated between a third and half of that money each of the years to the operating budget to help solve the gap. So the last 3 years, we've put away about 50%, give or take, of what we should have according to the plan. The idea, one of the things when things do improve that we would likely recommend to your board is that we begin to put aside the full amount so that we're in a position to take care of our facilities in future years.
And this would include fixed assets like equipment and infrastructure on things like
it includes the bigger equipment and automation, not things such as personal computers and whatnot or desktop workstations, but right. The network and the infrastructure, correct?
Okay. Thank you.
Any other colleagues at this point? Mr. Gibson?
Quick one. Mr. Berkshire, I saw on one of the slides that you indicated our workers' comp program had reduced expenditures by $1.5 million out of a total of about what?
I believe that in this past year was about a 50% reduction that we reduced the rate on an annual basis.
Thanks.
In prior years, it's gone down, I believe, $5 to $7 million from where we were about 5 years ago. It's significant.
Okay, and that's just in terms of claims itself?
Or is that the whole program. But the claims is the biggest driver.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, with that, I'm going to open it up for public comment. We'll start off with Andy Caldwell, followed by Kim Daniels.
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, I'm Andy Caldwell representing CoLab. I've been serving as a government watchdog and business advocate on the Central Coast for 20 years, and one of the things I do every year is I read the county budget book in Santa Barbara cover to cover. They have much more extensive information and history than yours, and I'm not knocking yours. I think that overall you have a much more common sense approach to things, to tell you the truth. But the bottom line, I also have a talk show, and I talk to a lot of people in Sacramento and actually across the country. This recession is not over, and in fact, there's going to be another wave of foreclosures. The other thing that no government entity, either in San Luis or Santa Barbara, wants to acknowledge is the impacts of AB 32, which is supposed to have a $200 billion annual impact on our economy, and that's gone from these forecasts. The question that we have for you is, what can you do to change the paradigm? What we see is governments applying tourniquets as versus doing radical surgery. You're trying to stop the hemorrhaging, but you're not actually doing anything to stop the underlying cause of the bleeding. Part of it is the pensions, part of it is salary, but part of it is land use decisions that you make. One of the things I did is I moderated a sheriff's forum for San Luis Obispo County. And to the man, there is nobody that is satisfied with what we're getting for public funding for the sheriff. Can you imagine being in a life-threatening situation? A life-threatening situation. And it takes 10 to 15 minutes for a deputy to respond? Is that adequate? That's in your performance measures, 10 to 15 minutes. You have less staffing in the Sheriff's Department now than you did 10 years ago. And yet, your general fund contribution to planning and development is $6 million a year in the middle of a recession. Santa Barbara County puts only $4 million. Their budget's almost twice as much as yours. And you're putting 50% more general fund money in your planning department than they are. They took a 50% cut in staff over the last 10 years in their planning department. You took 14%. You need to deal with that sacred cow because your public funding for public safety is woefully inadequate. And this is something within your power to do something about. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim Daniels, followed by Terry Medzik,
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, honorable board members. I have some questions that, and I do not claim to be a budget expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I have some questions that came to light in reviewing the proposed budget. I don't understand why there is a recommendation to increase spending in HR by $600,000 to add new staff and consultants at a time when every other department is being told to cut their costs. When labor relations was transferred to the Human Resources Department, the staff that previously worked in labor relations did not transfer with the division going down to Human Resources. I don't understand why there's an approximate 9% increase in the HR budget. I don't understand why we're adding an additional principal administrative analyst to risk management at a cost of $360,000 according to the proposed budget. We have an excellent safety officer who is eminently qualified for the position if the county chose to promote him. I don't understand why departments are being told to cut spending, which means cutting staff in a number of cases, when these budget increases for basically for the admin office and for human resources go forward as proposed. The employees of this county know better than anyone else exactly what tough economic times we're in. The group I represent, as you know, has contributed by deferring cost of living increases and picking up additional pension costs, approximately $5 million savings to the county. I am asking that you not approve any of the 2009-10 proposed layoffs or position reductions, and that you, I will be supporting Ms. Griffin when she comes forward with the at issue on the planning department. I'm asking that you instruct staff to meet with SLOSIA and discuss what we can continue to do to save these positions, because it isn't just jobs, it's services to the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Terry Medzik, followed by Ron Cole.
Hi, my name is Terry Medzik. I'm a Department Automation Specialist for Planning and Building. My specialty is database, and I'm a computer tech. I developed the Ombudsman database that handles the calls and communications between constituents and you, the Board of Supervisors. Last year, my job was saved by making half my time the homeless database administrator that was paid with grant funds. As a result of that, our department has experienced downtime. And we all know what downtime is. A couple of months ago with the antivirus mishap, and virtually every computer on our county network was shut down. I don't know about you or the other departments, but in planning and building, no one was able to work. I and another DAS in planning and building are slated to go three-quarter time as of July 1st. This means I will only be able to assist the people in my department and go to meetings and all this 2 hours a day. That's it. After 6 hours, Ryan has to go home. This will cause significant downtime in our department because I'm already only available to the department half-time. In the last week alone, there were three instances where customers at the front counter had to wait until a DAS could get free to come and help them. Service is being affected already. Cashiers, permit techs, planners that need to get over here and present to you, even Cammie Griffin, our assistant director, when they have a problem, they will be put on a list. They will be triaged to priority, and they will sit and wait until a DAS can get there to help them. This may be with a customer standing right in front of them. This may be with a customer standing right in front of them, check in hand, wanting to pay and get back to the job site, and all the cashier can say is, "I'm sorry," and stand there and wait. No one wants to cut off a hand or a foot. That's crippling. But if you cut the brain, what good is a hand or a foot? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cole, followed by Deborah Smith-Cook.
Yeah, hi. My name is Ron Coleman. I'm a county employee, and I have been for over 30 years. And I'm here today to talk about the budget and the proposed layoffs and reduction in staff and county employees. I'm very concerned with that, having been an employee for 30 years and worked with a lot of these people in these departments and know the services that they provide. And I understand Mr. Buckshy, and I'm not a budget person either. I don't know how to manipulate all the figures and who does what and full-time equivalents and that, but It's my understanding there are about 17 employees that will be adversely affected by the proposed budget. 17 of those employees, of those, 9 will entirely lose their employment, while 8 others, their positions will be cut by 25%. For the past fiscal year, as Mr. Buckshy mentioned, because of the sacrifices that SLOCIA, San Luis Obispo County Employees Association members have made, the members were able to save the county approximately $5 million. That's a staggering amount to me. I'm not a budget guy, but $5 million is a heck of a lot of money to save. The cost of these positions is far less than that $5 million. Far less. And there is room in this budget to continue to work together to avoid these layoffs and to avoid these reductions in positions. I don't understand why we aren't looking at those options. It definitely concerns me when fellow employees that have dedicated their jobs, their time in service to help the public is potentially being treated like this. So I just want to say, please don't accept the recommendations that include reducing and eliminating these employees' positions and the services that they provide. It's very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Deborah Smith-Cook.
Good morning.
Followed by Dan Quayle, please.
My name is Deborah Smith-Cook, county employee and president of SLOCIA. I would like to make the following comments regarding the proposed budget. On page A2, there is a statement that labor costs are 60 to 80% of the total expenditures for the county. And further, unless employee associations agree to help reduce labor costs, the budget gaps will continue into the future. I find it disheartening that your staff is relying on employee associations to help reduce labor costs, and they say nothing about requesting management to do the same. Management compensation includes benefits to which line staff are not entitled. Okay, some have annual car allowances that are pensionable. Then there are the gym memberships. Cuts in these two areas alone could save the county significantly. Additionally, many managers are paid higher than average comparable for comparable counties, as stated in the 2009 comp survey for management and elected officials. It's an insult to the backbone of the county workers to ignore management excesses and continue to cut those positions whose salaries are already significantly below average comparable counties. County government is providing a service to the members of the county. In order to provide these services, counties rely on its labor force. Okay, it's not out of line that labor costs for any service organization would be 60 to 80%. By continuing to cut labor through layoffs, position reductions, or salary reductions, the end result is that services must be cut. We are past the do more with less period. County staff is already stressed beyond breaking, trying to maintain the current service level. Please remember, SLOCIA members have gone above and beyond any other employee group, including management, in terms of making sacrifices. Our actions have saved the county at least $5 million. That's a lot. Yet attorneys in the county council and district attorneys have been granted retroactive salary increases, as well as an increase in cafeteria contributions. The DSA are slated to receive a prevailing wage increase this year, and probation and peace officers have received an increase to their cafeteria contribution. If your staff is relying on employee associations to reduce labor costs, then please tell me why these other employee associations are being granted pensionable increase. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Quayle, and followed by Chris Craig, please.
Honorable board, members of the audience, good morning. My name is Dan Quayle, and I've been employed by the County Public Works Department for the past 28 years. I've been involved with the contract negotiations for about 25, first with the Trades and Crafts Unit and currently with the Supervisor Unit, both represented by SLOCIA. During that time, we faced good economic times and, like today, some challenging times. We have, to this point, always been able to reach workable solutions through the meet and confer process, always achieving the county's budget goals and keeping employees working. SLOCIA represented employees are still ready and willing to work with the county on these issues, and I feel that all county employees should be required to participate in this process. In the past few years, SLOCIA represented employees have made significant concessions which have resulted in over $5 million in savings to the county. In this budget year, you're faced with some difficult decisions. I'm asking that you would consider our input on cost-saving measures before making any decisions that would adversely affect county employees. I look forward to working with the county to help overcome these challenges. Thank you for your time.
Really? Craig? And Mr. Reed, did you want to comment on? Okay, you're up next.
Good morning. My name is Chris Gregg. I work for the county, and I'm slated for layoff as of June 30. And I'm just here to agree with the other people that say that we do provide valuable services. I've spent considerable time, and the county has spent considerable monies getting me trained so that I can be a productive member of the Environmental Health Service Program, and I'd like to continue with that endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Reed.
All right. Well, I know you guys have a lot of tough stuff in front of you today, and I just wanted to add a little positive note if I can. And I am here representing the county's Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board, to which I am the chairperson and have been a member for about 5 years. And the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board's charge, as it were, is to advise the Board of Supervisors about policies relevant to local drug and alcohol treatment programs. And today I'm actually here to read a commendation letter that our board had drafted and approved at our last meeting, dated May 20th, 2010. The San Luis Obispo County Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board would like to commend the County Behavioral Health Department employees who recently voted to defer on receiving their rightfully owed cost of living, or COLA, adjustments in order to prevent further cutbacks in services. This act of self-sacrifice is further evidence of the caring and altruistic nature of our county employees. No doubt we are in tough economic times with workforces and budgets being cut. When budgets are slashed and departments are reduced, the population being served can expect less service. As we know, this reduction in services can have far-reaching effects, further impacting our social service and criminal justice systems. The deferral of COLAs is likely to offset many of these potential negative consequences. The Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board is extremely appreciative that county staff recognized these risks and took the appropriate action. It is with appreciation that the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board recognizes the insight the employees of the County Behavioral Health Department have displayed. Recognizing that a deferment of obtaining COLAs would serve everyone better than layoffs may seem like a simple and smart choice, yet across the county, state, and nation, the simple and smart choice isn't always the one taken. Placing the needs of the client as well as the employee first was the responsible choice in this matter. Thank you to the staff who made this choice. Jason Reed, Chair, Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Reed. That concludes the... Mr. Greeny. Anybody else on just the overall budget comments?
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I already made some not directly budget-related comments, but I probably should have thrown in an extra slip, but my oversight. Anyway, I am Eric Greening, and first thing I'd like to say is when hardworking employees serving the people come forward and ask for fair treatment, I would hope that you would listen to that very, very seriously. We all realize that there is pain being shared, and the mark of true leadership is the willingness to take on some of that pain before seeing it carried disproportionately by others. So I hope you would remember that throughout this entire process. I have a question about the, in the budget narrative in the budget book, it talks about how the state and federal revenues represent 43% of our budget, and that this component is assumed to shrink 4.5%. I am assuming that that is not taking into account the future shrinkages that we're talking about coming back later. But I'm hoping for an answer to that. That, in other words, it could be more than a 4.5% shrinkage. And so I guess then the question is, what are our guidelines for dealing with it at that time? Are we intending to retain a 43% ratio regardless of what it does to the entire pie by shrinking the general fund? Are we looking at backfilling from general fund? Are we looking at other revenue sources? How are we looking at dealing with if that shrinkage is more than planned? And again, when that time comes, I hope that fairness to all is always the watchword in terms of how we do this. I have to tell you, I've known a lot of county employees, both in their context of serving the public and as human beings, and I have yet to meet one slacker. Out of the 2,000 and however many we have right now, I have yet to meet one who doesn't take their job seriously and their answerability to the public, to we the people, seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the public comment portion of the overall budget. We're going to come back. Staff, any comments and answers to some of the questions that were posed by public comment? Buckshine?
Thank you, Jim Grant. I'll talk about Mr. Greeny's statement right now about the federal, state and federal revenue. We've done our best job estimating what that might be, but it does not take into consideration what the state will be doing at their budget level at this point in time. Typically, we abide by the board budget policies that state that if state and federal revenue shrink, those programs that are the recipients of that revenue also shrink. It doesn't. We don't take a look at other departments or backfill with general fund revenue. We simply can't do that. If we did that and we had done that over the last couple of years, our budget gap would be humongous. So we have to take into consideration that those programs that are funded by those state and federal revenues stand on their own, and they shrink and they rise depending on the revenue sources. And I would say that over the last number of years before we started the cutbacks, those programs were recipients of a great deal of state and federal revenue, grew a great deal. Now they are shrinking back depending on that revenue source.
Mr. Buckshire.
I was just going to add a couple of comments related to Ms. Daniels' comments. I think when we get to the support to county departments portion of the budget, we'll address a number of her comments related to the safety program and the human resources budget. And unless you want to talk about it now, I think we can definitely answer those at that point in time. We're planning on sharing some of those details.
We'll do it at that point. Okay. Who's up first?
So the land-based departments are up right now. The first one is the agricultural commissioner, and that's page D1 of your budget book.
If I may, I have a brief introduction to each of the functional areas, and then we can take it from there. With respect to land-based, you can see here it comprises about $45 million, or about 10% of the total budget. And there are about 325 positions, of which 10 are proposed to be eliminated in the 10-11 fiscal year. 8 of those are in the Public Works Department, 2 of those in the Planning Department. And again, for 10-11, those are all vacant positions. This does include, I do want to emphasize on the bottom there, it does include the Public Works Special Districts budget. This is created by Public Works on behalf of the numerous special districts that they oversee and manage. Service level impacts, just an executive level summary, if you will, is that there will be an impact to county roads. There will be reduced pavement management. It's a conscious decision in the near term that it's manageable, and longer term as we approach the new normal and able to put more funding back into roads that we can recoup. It's essentially deferred maintenance. Will be possible slower response times, you can see here, to roadway, tree bridge, or other types of traffic issues when a storm arises, that sort of thing. Moving into the planning arena, there is no Williamson Act funding again. This is the second year that this has occurred. The county used to receive about $1 million, and that was intended to mostly offset the property tax that is lost because these programs are in agricultural protected properties. Your board had chosen in last year to continue with the program as it is. That's an option for your board to reconsider at any point in time how you want to proceed with the Williamson Act funding, but at this point in time, continuing as it has been run for a number of years. Then lastly, there is a potential issue related to a revenue source for the Agricultural Commissioner. Without going into the finite details of what unclaimed gas tax is, it's a revenue of about $1.5 million for the Agricultural Commissioner's office. About 3 years ago, legislation was passed that essentially reduced or limited counties' abilities to reduce the general fund support to those programs, and it states that counties must spend equal to the 5-year average of general fund support going forward. Well, in 09-10 and 10-11, we're going to be very close to that dollar amount of whether or not we would meet that 5-year average, and if you don't meet it, potentially you could lose the entire gas tax, which is about $1.5 million. Obviously, we're working to avoid that. We want to receive that revenue. One of the options, and I believe 15 or so counties have done this to date, is an exemption can be requested for the first year, and the state will waive that 5-year rolling average. Likely we'll be requesting that within the next few months. I believe the applications for the exemptions are due in the fall. But I just want to alert your board to that. That is something we'll be tracking closely. And also, we are working with CSAC and with our state lobbyists to revisit that legislation and to hopefully update it to allow counties a little more flexibility in looking at those programs. And that is the overview for land-based. One more. Sorry about that. We do have the two add issue items related to planning and building. I mentioned in the overview, the request is to add back a 3/4-time building inspector and to add back a 3/4-time code enforcement. Now, as it stands, these are actual positions that would, as you may recall, last year during budget hearings, there was a proposal to reduce a full-time code enforcement and full-time building inspectors, and instead the decision was to scale back a number of positions from full to 3/4-time. What the proposed budget does is brings 3/4-time back to full-time, but then eliminates one position. So the FTE is roughly comparable. In fact, what's before you is a small increase, I believe about 1/4 to 1/2 position compared to where we were in 09-10, but it does result in an actual person. These two people would be laid off under the proposed budget. Planning and Building does have some information to share with respect to potential revenue to add these positions back.
Okay, in regard to the Williamson Act, I know that there's CSAC and RCRC, and I know some of the local organizations have sent letters to the governor requesting that they not only fulfill their obligation to that, but to retroactively go back and pay. And I don't see that happening any time soon. And I've mentioned this to you as well as Mr. Grant. I thought, would it be appropriate to seek from our legislative platform maybe the possibility of a 5-year backfill of a 20% per year that they could maybe fill this? My concern is that if we continue to fill it 100%, the state is not going to fill it at all, and we're going to be stuck with it every year. And then we're probably going to have to come up with some type of a creative means in which we address that. So I was thinking that if we had some type of legislation proposed that would allow for 20% per year over the next 5 years, then that might get us back to where we were.
Jim Grant, County Administrator. There is a committee at the and a group, a working group at the state level from many counties that are meeting regularly trying to solve this issue. And there are a number of proposals on the table. I would say that we will never get back any retroactivity. That's probably off the table right now. But moving forward, they're looking at a variety of options where there are some ways of maybe basically splitting the baby, if we could, with the state. If we can get some recognition and some reimbursement back, that would help get us down the road, but we're going to have to, we're still working together, working with our state lobbyists in order to craft something that we can deal with on a more of a statewide basis rather than each county going off on their own to an individual basis.
Well, could we,
Mr. Gibson might have more information on that. I don't know if you...
I guess I'm wondering, could we submit something to let them know where we are with this, or that's, I guess, based upon if the board has that kind of a direction. Mr. Gibson, did you want to respond to that?
Well, actually, no. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Just, for the record, Mr. Chairman, I do have property in the Williamson Act, and so if this board contemplates any specific actions, either making recommendations or changing this budget based on a lack of Williamson Act funding, I will recuse myself. But I did want to just ask, Mr. Buckshy showed mentioned the lack of Williamson Act subventions in the land-based budgets. My recollection that money comes to our general fund and is not specifically constrained to any particular use. So it's a little more diffuse issue than that. But I will leave my four colleagues to their deliberations on that should we get specific on that.
Thank you. And, I mean,
yes,
who
of course.
Do we send it to? Who do we send our suggestions to in that regard?
Well, I would suggest that let me get a hold of Paul Yoder from Peterson Consulting and discuss with him our best move on that and let him provide some guidance, and I can bring that back later today or tomorrow.
That'd be great. Thank you. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Buckshy and perhaps Mr. Lilly. Our Ag Commissioner, relative to the unclaimed gas tax and just the gas tax revenue in general, you mentioned we have in our budget document, it says $1.2 million of gas tax money, but we also have factored in $192,000 from the unclaimed gas tax that we apply for. And I'm curious to know if there's a contingency plan in the event that we don't get that money, since it is included in the actual budget.
I'll try to tackle it first and let Mr. Lilly hop in for additional detail. I think at this point we're fairly confident that we will receive it. Agricultural Commissioner's office has been tracking this very closely. A couple options. One, we could ask for the first year exemption, which so far nobody has been denied, I believe. And then secondly, worst case, may have to spend a little bit more money in order to get that $1.5 million, and that's with the balancing act that they're tracking closely and that we'd be reporting to your board on a regular basis.
And Mr. Chairman, could I just get one other thing to ask the Ag Commissioners, what qualifying programs are affected by this as well?
Mr. Lilly?
Morning. Bob Lilly, Ag Commissioner. This is called the unclaimed gas tax, and what that is the farmers, of course, buy gasoline and they use it off-road. And so since the use is off-road, the tax doesn't go to paving freeways and building bridges and that kind of thing. So it's considered about 10% of the total of gasoline is used off-road. And so the way it's set up is the Secretary of Agriculture then is authorized to get the 10% of the total fund from Caltrans, and then that's distributed to the county ag commissioners for ag commissioner programs. So this has been in place for years. As far as which programs qualify, all of our programs qualify except for land use planning, weights and measures, and nuclear power plant response. So all of our other programs, which we would call our core programs that are in the Food and Ag Code, qualify for it. So the provision that's changed in the state law, it requires a maintenance of effort, is basically the generic term for this. So we have a rolling five-year average of our net county cost contribution, and for a year that we didn't meet or exceed the five-year average, then the Secretary of Agriculture is authorized to not give the county any of the gas tax, to put it to zero, with the exception if we claim a hardship. And so there's a formal process that we would do and we will do to claim the hardship, and as the administrative office mentioned, this law has just gone into effect. So this for the current year's gas tax, there was 12 counties that claimed the hardship, and all 12 were granted the hardship, so the gas tax check went in. So if you want to be a betting person, the odds are in our favor to claim the hardship and get the funding. it's looking now like so the way the gas tax worked, it's based on your net county cost. So I'll take this year, for example. So our 09-10 net county cost has to meet the five-year average in order to get the check for next year. So it's based on the previous year. So it's looking like we're going to be below our five-year average for 09-10, and so we will have to ask for the hardship to get the check for next year. So I realize we're talking about the 10-11 budget now, that'll be another factor, and we'll be looking at that, of course, off into the future. The reason that we're below our five-year average is that we lost 10% of our staff of 09-10. We had 4.5 positions cut out of 45, and then we had an extra revenue come in this year, so those both have a negative effect on your net county cost. And so it's looking like we're going to be in the neighborhood of $150,000 short for our net county cost for 09-10, so we'll have to ask for the hardship. And then looking at our 10-11 budget, our projection is about $100,000 short looking into the net county cost off into the future.
Other questions for Mr. Lilly? Thank you, sir. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Grant, you'd indicated that CSAC is working, or we're going to be going directly to our lobbyist on this. This one would seem to affect virtually all counties eventually, and would seem that we may need to interact with the state to revisit this.
Yes, again, Jim Grant, that's exactly right. The CSAC is working on this. It's a big project for them. I would also say that our Peterson Associates, who we work for or with, they represent many of the large counties that have a large stake in this. So they have been working very closely with all those counties, including us, in terms of moving forward with some sort of plan to deal with it at the state level. So we'll contact both and make sure we've covered our bases.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the Ag Commissioner's Office.
You can just run through the entire functional group if you have any questions on
it. Land-based?
Well, we're not through with land-based yet.
No, but the agenda says you take public comment at the beginning and then you go department by department.
That would go for that. Okay. All right. Mr. Greening, and followed by Andy Caldwell.
Thank you. Yeah, Eric Greening. It's always important to have comment before action. So, anyway, yes, I am Eric Greening, and on the Williamson Act, obviously, whatever the state does, they are contracts. And we can't simply unilaterally walk away from contracts. So somehow the money has to come from somewhere, but hopefully the state will also realize that, and we need to make that very powerful argument, that if the state thinks that we can consider walking away from contracts or that they can walk away from contracts, whatever reputation they might have left is definitely not going to be worth very much. Relative to the proposed 20% reduction in general fund support for roads, obviously deferred maintenance is not a good long-term policy. This move I would find acceptable under the following circumstances and understandings. Number one, that for the resources available, there is a clear established priority for maintenance over system expansion. Instead of just generically saying there'll be reduced pavement management, that the first thing we should do is search for any of this money that's going to capacity-increasing projects, and unless they serve a vital safety function, put those on hold while we maintain the pavement we've got. This isn't a time to be assuming vehicle miles traveled is just going to keep increasing and we have to meet that increase when we're working on other policy documents that say we should be shrinking it. So that should be the basis of our planning. And the other piece of it that we should be working on is, if we're reducing general fund support, why not be looking for user fee support to make up for it? Maybe we can continue reducing general fund support, and in the spirit of our climate action plan, find support that moves us away from subsidizing the single occupant driver. Don't just walk away from maintenance that needs to be done, but make sure that the responsibility for that maintenance has a bearing on the decision of people to buy cars, get in cars, drive cars, how they batch their trips, how they batch the people that they're carrying or don't batch. That's where it needs to come to rest if we're serious about our climate action plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Caldwell, followed by Sue Luft.
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, I'm Andy Caldwell representing CoLab. As I mentioned in the general comments, the question that your constituents and the taxpayers want addressed is what can you actually do? It's very easy to play the victim with respect to the economy and with respect to the dysfunction of the state, but there are things within your power and within your authority that you can make changes with respect to your discretionary spending. And as I mentioned, your general fund support for planning and building is $6,225,000, over 56% of the funding for this department is coming from the general fund. It's entirely discretionary. And that department has had a 14% decrease in the last 10 years from what it was in 2001-02. In the middle of a recession. And to add insult to injury, as you know, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 90% of your discretionary funds come from property tax dollars. So to whatever you do to undermine the value of property, it's cutting off your nose and spite of your face. The smart growth ordinance, the events ordinance, any of these things that undermine the value of property or undermine economic activity in the county cuts off the discretionary funds. So you make things worse by putting more and more money into these land-based program planning efforts. You're actually hurting the economy at the same time you're spending precious few discretionary dollars. You could cut that budget in half and nothing would happen with respect to land use because the economy, the development community, is flat on its back. There's no threat of being overrun with development right now that you have to spend over $6 million in general fund monies for planning. There's no threat of development. And that which precludes growth in a boom economy is preventing economic recovery in this recession. You are making things worse by spending that much money. You could cut that budget, that general fund subsidy, in half and hire 30 more deputies in this county and have a response time quicker than 10 to 15 minutes for life-threatening emergencies. We're not pro-growth. We are pro-private property rights, but you know the statistics that Jerry Bunin can give you on the amount of development activity or the threat of it in the near future is nil. Change your values commensurate with the citizens' requests. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue Luft, followed by Jean-Pierre Wolf, please.
Hi, my name is Sue Luft. I'm a director of the Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District. The Upper Salinas Los Tablas RCD and our sister district, the Coastal San Luis RCD, have worked in partnership with the county during our nearly 60 years of existence. RCDs have a long history of assisting agriculturalists and rural landowners with appropriate erosion control practices and techniques to conserve our resources. We welcome the opportunity to assist the county with the recently revised agricultural grading ordinance. The RCDs have been assigned a key role by the county in this program. We believe that the expertise provided by our RCDs would ensure a simple, cost-effective approach that would be accepted by the landowners. We have submitted a request for seed funding from the county in order to implement the program, as discussed in the letter we provided to your board. Our directors have discussed this request with the members of your board. The funding request should not be confused with the operating funds provided to the RCDs under Fund Center 106, which will be discussed in Wednesday's budget hearing. Our RCDs have been providing assistance to the county during the development of the revised grading ordinance. To date, we have spent over $26,000 assisting in staff time, assisting in the development of the alternative review process. We would appreciate if your board would also consider providing some reimbursement of our cost to date. We hope that your board will approve our funding request. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll follow by Kim Daniels. Sir.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jean-Pierre Wolf, and I'm vice president of the Coastal St. Louis RCD, so I'm the counterpart of Sue, who spoke with you briefly. Just wanted to add 4 points, is that we are a special district within the state of California, so all of our meetings, budgets, planning activities are subject to public scrutiny. Our meetings are public, we're subject to the Brown Act, and therefore all of our financial administration is clearly open to inputs and discussions. We're a non-regulatory arm within the special district, and being a non-regulatory, it puts us in a more special relationship with agriculturists, because they do not view us as being some of the folks who are setting up some of the rules and regulations. So that unique role has built quite a bit of a good, strong rapport with the agriculturist within our county. Second point is that we have a working board, not just because our board of directors have their own job, but we use a hands-on approach where the skills of our board is used in some of the projects. So when earlier we talked about staff time activity, there is a significant amount of hours that the board, who's not compensated, helps also into these programs. The third point is that we do have representation of both of the RCDs at the agriculture liaison board. And so within ALAB, we're also working closely, therefore, with all the various ag commodities that are represented at those meetings. So we do have that good seamless relationship. I think, lastly, there's a unique opportunity here to use these new grading ordinance to further help agriculturists, because as a special district, we have access and we qualify for federal and state grants. And therefore, when agriculturists would come to us with a particular project, we may be able to use some of the fundings that we have through various grants to help them offset some of the cost of a project. So I think this is another element that adds a little bit of uniqueness by having the RCD involved in the administration of these new grading ordinance, and would provide some positive light with these new ordinance. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. You have a question for
Kim? No, I wanted to comment when they're done.
Okay. Kim?
Good morning again. I just have a brief comment with regard to both planning and the Ag Commission. I'd ask your board to remember that for years during our rapid expansion, high growth development era, the planning department contributed funds to the general fund in the fees that they collected. The staffing at planning was reaching what would be considered adequate levels given the amount of growth that was going on, and the expectation of the building community and the services that were provided. Cutting staffing at this time would not be prudent, in that our building inspectors and our code enforcement officers generate revenue by inspecting projects prior to completion and ensuring that they are meeting building codes, and with code enforcement by being able to be proactive in examining enforcing the building codes. They are revenue generators. Cutting the staffing in those areas is not a good decision. With regard to the Ag Commission and his budget, with the significant amount of agriculture in our county, reducing staff in that area, again, is not prudent. And I would ask, and maybe I misunderstood what Mr. Lilly was saying, but if we have not spent sufficiently to get the unclaimed gas tax, why couldn't we use those funds to offset the proposed reductions of the Department Automation Specialists in that department to bring us to the level of if it's dollar for dollar, instead of having to ask for an exemption. And maybe when he does his budget, he could explain that. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more requests on the land-based. I did have an opportunity to meet with Chuck Pritchard with the RCD last week. I think based upon the direction of the board on the grading ordinance and what we've asked the RCD to do in terms of alternative review and other consultations, I personally would support trying to find a way that we can accommodate the financial wherewithal for them to continue along these programs. I think it's going to get even more onerous on them if we continue to push in that direction. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to speak to that same item. I, too, have had an opportunity to speak with representatives from the RCD and also with Mr. Grant. The RCD did propose a tentative budget for 2010-11, and I think that it's appropriate to, since we have asked them to step up and help us implement the grading ordinance through alternative review, it makes sense to include some funding for that service. And the RCD is on our list of agencies that we provide supplemental funds to, and that will be heard on Wednesday, but we can speak directly to it then. Mr. Grant thought that might be a better time to have that conversation. I do think it's important, though, to point out that the funding that we provide the RCDs through Fund Center 106 is really to keep them operational and not specific to the alternative review process. And I think actually what they have proposed is to not only provide the service to agriculturists coming to their offices, but also to work with the agricultural commissioner and planning to develop some of the resources that they would use in educating the agriculturists about our grading ordinance and implementation and so forth. And if that budget is actually included with planning and building, it would be a way to track those services. Whereas, again, the Fund Center 106, which we will be hearing on Wednesday, is just a contribution to the RCDs for their operational expenses. But I am supportive, Mr. Chair, of allocating some funding, and again, I'll ask Mr. Grant how he thinks we best ought to pursue it. Also, I would be supportive of helping with some level of reimbursement for the work that they've had to do as part of the grading ordinance development and working with planning and with agriculturists and with the Ag Commissioner's Office, and actually getting us to a point where they will be part of our grading ordinance review.
Mr. Grant?
Yes, Jim Grant. This was a last-minute item that has just arrived just late last week. I've not had a chance to look at it. The board has expressed some interest in looking and reviewing it and deciding whether they want to provide some additional funding. My recommendation to you today would be that we bring this back on Wednesday when the RCD budget comes up and we can discuss it at that point. It gives me a little bit of time to meet with planning, meet with Public Works to just kind of decide how we want to approach this and what kind of options are available to the board. So it would just give me a little bit more time to deal with it on a more probably technical basis and provide some direction in terms of funding and how we would do that.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And following along there, that would also, I think, provide the RCD a chance to get together any numbers on reimbursement that they may be considering. It is in this.
I didn't see the reimbursement.
Okay.
Oh, up there. Okay.
I'm certainly supportive as well. I think just for the public's benefit, looking forward, the RCD is the two RCDs together are asking for something less than or just over $17,000, and I think that that's money well spent to develop a very fruitful partnership with an important agency here. So I'll look forward to the discussion on Wednesday. I was curious also of our admin staff, at what point are we going to discuss the planning at issue items?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask next. But in that regard, when you come back with that, Mr. Grant, if you could also take into consideration the reimbursement, which they've indicated about $26,000 that's been expended so far with 400 hours of staff time that they've allocated. So if that could be incorporated into that as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah. Mr. Hill?
I just wanted to add on to that when we come back to that on Wednesday, that admins, I guess, in discussion with planning, they will be clear that we've asked through, you know, in the development of our ag rating ordinance, that the RCD play a critical role in this. Therefore, this is not just a sort of one-time bump in funding. We're assigning more responsibilities to them, and we're going to need to fund them more than we have.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. My question is then, we're not just looking for additional $17,000. If we're going to consider the reimbursement as 26 of $43,000,
we'll bring back options for you to talk and discuss each of those items.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay. We're going to move into the planning and building.
Yeah. If there are no further comments on agricultural commissioner, planning and building is next up. Hand it over to Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Cammie Griffin, County Planning. Late last week, we did discover a clerical error, and I want to try and explain that to you today because I believe that we can cover these positions now that are at issue without any additional general fund support. When we were looking at balancing our fee revenues against the new fee schedule that goes into effect on July 1, we discovered an error in our Excel spreadsheets. How we determine or develop our revenue projections are to take each of our fees, determine how many of each of those fees we think we're going to sell in the next year, and come up with a total. What we found that one part of the Excel spreadsheet did not total, and so when we brought the numbers over into the budget system, we were missing an amount of money, not very large, so it wasn't readily apparent to either admin or our department in looking at our revenue projections. But now we do feel that we're in a position to cover the three-quarter time building inspector and three-quarter time resource protection specialist without asking for any additional general fund support. The revenues that we are projecting for next year are still very conservative. We are tracking at about 99% of our projected revenues this year, so we feel like our revenue projections are going to be accurate next year. We are only asking at three-quarter time to give us the flexibility to make sure that, in fact, our revenues do track as we're projecting next year. We'll look at a mid-year budget adjustment either way. If we don't see the revenues coming in, we'll be back to you mid-year looking for additional expenditure cuts. If we do see them tracking or maybe even tracking better, we'll perhaps be able to come back to you to increase those positions to three-quarter time, as well as the two existing positions in the department, the Department Automation Specialist, the DAS positions that are budgeted at three-quarter time. And with that, I would be available to answer any questions.
Questions of my colleagues, Mr. Patterson?
Yes. There was a comment today about your information technology specialist, and that recommendation is to maintain that at three-quarter time?
That's correct. We have three department automation specialists in the department, and the proposed 10-11 budget shows two out of the three at three-quarter time, with one of those positions partially offset by grant funding associated with the homeless.
Other comments? I guess one of the questions that I have is in regard to, I can understand the increased demand in code enforcement, but do we have an increased demand, or do we have a demand from an inspection standpoint?
I would say actually we're seeing greater increased demand on the building side We're actually seeing our building revenue track higher this year. We're actually seeing an increase in building permit activity this year, which then, of course, leads to an increase in the inspection activity. In addition, we have a number of state mandates that are coming down that are increasing the numbers of inspections necessary on building permits, including post-inspection inspections that will have to, or post-final inspections that will have to occur now with the NPDES adoption of the revised grading codes. So in addition to just seeing more building permits than we've seen previously, we're also seeing increased code compliance that is taking a longer time for our inspectors to do their inspections. We have a new code change also that's coming into effect as of January 1.
Gibson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In conversations with planning staff, I understood that on the inspection side, on the building side, that position was also important for us to maintain expertise in photovoltaics, which are a growing thing.
That's true. We have seen a significant increase in the number of building permits for photovoltaics. This particular inspector happens to be our photovoltaic expert. He not only does inspections, but also does plan check of those. The last photovoltaic building permit was actually turned around in 4 days due to that focused expertise.
And on the enforcement side, I think all of my colleagues understand the constituent service that code enforcement affords us on the one hand, also the health and safety. And we have some extremely high-profile cases that have taken a great amount of effort on the enforcement side, and we have been chronically understaffed in that area. I think on the enforcement side, though, it would be good, I think, to have, as we move forward, maybe a little more detail on what kind of cases we have out, what their aging is, what their nature is, and any plans that code enforcement might have for doing some proactive code enforcement. We know that there have been community cleanup days and things like that that, you know, add to the vision of the community and hopefully avert more difficult situations down the line. But looking forward, again, a little more specificity in what code enforcement is doing, I think, would be helpful.
Mr. Asajun?
Thank you, sir. I believe Mr. Griffin already answered my question, but partially on the, you see there are more applicants coming in for a building, but how many of those are moving forward?
Actually,
not just through the process, but
through issuance. We not only are getting a higher number of actual applications coming in the door, but our issuance numbers are tracking a little higher than the previous year. So we're actually seeing folks pull building permits, and I think partly that's due to an ordinance amendment that your board approved last year that allows folks more time during that time between when they come in the door to apply and when they are issued in order to put together their financing packages. It used to be very narrow timelines. Your board adopted a change to our Title 19 that allowed for longer timelines. I think that's helping folks be able to put together the financing packages.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's also something I think we need to be aware of with our California First program and AB 811. Hopefully, we'll be rolling that financing program out in late summer, early fall, and we're hoping with as much interest as there appears to be in the public for these programs that we'll see a higher rate of applications for energy efficiency upgrades and renewable energy technology, and we certainly want to have the people on staff able to process those applications.
And that's correct. At the time we prepared these initial revenue projections, we were not including the AB 811 program because we didn't know its status at that time. So potentially you could even see a greater amount of revenue coming in than we were even projecting. Again, we're trying to be very conservative so that if things don't go well next year, we're able to respond without having to make drastic changes.
And I've got a question about the AB 811 program, because I've heard that there's a little bit of a problem there in terms of this thing rolling out, not with us, but from all of our other partners. Is this this thing going to happen, or is it still questionable?
As far as we know, it's going to happen. There has been an issue with grant funding. One of the folks who applied for the state grants was not awarded to them. They have questioned that and are currently in legal action. However, we're under the understanding that that will be addressed relatively quickly. And even though we may see a small, we may see exactly what we have gotten from the state, but we may see a small decrease in that grant funding. All indications are that that won't affect the 14 pilot counties that are participating in the pilot program.
If I can just add to that, I believe it was Riverside County that...
it was the West Riverside County COG, the War COG.
And what it seems like one of the likely scenarios, if they're successful in their lawsuit challenging the grant award, is that the state would go back out, basically, and request proposals again for these programs. And the 14-county coalition was by far the highest-rated program. So if they go back out to bid, if you will, for the receipt of these funds, it seems very likely that the California First pilot would be the number one priority again.
Thank you. Any other questions this time? Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Thank you. I don't have any other requests to speak on the at this point. Next, you want to take a break? Let's take 10 minutes. We'll be back at 10 minutes to 11. Could have you please return? Don't make me use this gavel on you. Okay. Briefly, for colleagues, would you want to go back and discuss the ad issue items, or do you want to finish up with the planning and building and move on and then come back to it?
Are we? I think we're pretty much done with. Are you think finish with land base before we came back to?
We still have more land base.
We still have more land base.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have one, two, three, four, five, about five different little parts here, but. If you want to go back at this point and do the ad issue items, we can do that, or we can wait until we complete the land-based budgets. Mr. Grant?
You've covered both ad issue items right now. You have, and you can take that tentative
vote.
You can straw poll it, maybe?
Right.
I'm to finish that out if you'd like, and then move on from planning. That'd probably be the best way to go about
okay.
it.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, I'm sorry, you had...
Yes, well, I had a question. I was wondering if Mr. Lilly could explain that five-year average and where we stand with that, and if we... Now, granted, we can go and ask for an exception and use for this year because we didn't meet it in this current fiscal year, but you mentioned that we don't meet it next year as well. And I'm wondering if by how much we don't meet it and if we should think about investing so we do meet it. If you have some thoughts on that, Bob.
Yes, so Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Lilly, again, Ag Commissioner. Mr. Patterson's correct. It's water under the bridge, so to speak, that we're not going to meet the five-year average for 2009-10, and we'll have to ask for the hardship. And in trying to track this issue closely in Sacramento, as I mentioned, all 12 hardships were granted on the first round, but there's indications that a second request of hardship might be more difficult. So this potentially could be managed with our 10-11 budget, although it would take an increase of the general fund contribution. And so in that regard, how we proposed it is on D4 of your budget book. We use the budget augmentation request process, or BARS, as we call them. And we have three filled positions that were going to result in layoff we requested to be reinstated or backfilled, however you want to call it, that relate to the general fund. So those are the ones that are listed as not recommended. So we have... Two of our two department automation specialists are slated to go from full-time down to three-quarter. And then we have a half-time technician that will be laid off entirely. So those are three of the filled positions that were talked about recently. So the cost of that is roughly $100,000, and our projected shortage to meet our five-year average is roughly $100,000.
If we did approve these that weren't recommended, then we would meet that five-year average, so we wouldn't in 11-12 have to go back and ask for an exemption to get the tax, the gas tax revenue?
Correct. I mean, we'd be about right even on it. It would be very close, but there would be other factors where we could manage it as well.
Okay. Well, I think it's certainly something to consider. You know, because we're talking about losing the entire gas tax amount, which this year is about $1.5
million. It's actually a little over $1.2 million, but it's a substantial amount. It's been, over the years, it's always our very largest revenue source.
Mr. Grant?
Yes, thank you, Jim Grant. Two thoughts come to mind, that in terms of our budget, yes, we are having budget issues and budget problems, but in comparison, we're probably far better off than most of our other counties. I can't imagine that out of 58 counties, that if 50 counties can't meet their match because they're cutting budgets, that some change or an exemption wouldn't occur. So it just seems, in my mind, that if we're significantly better off than most and we can't make this, then it would be, seem to me that the majority, if not all, counties are not going to meet this match, and that there's going to have to be a change either in the way they do business or a change in the law, which I would also, my second thought is we ought to reach out to our lobbyists and start looking at maybe changing this law in terms of not making it mandatory that we meet a general fund contribution, which I think is a bit ridiculous in this time of our budget crisis.
If for some reason it looks like the law doesn't get changed or Sacramento's going to hold the line on this, will we know soon enough to augment the budget so we don't lose out on that money?
Well, I guess that is the crux of the matter, whether or not we can do some research and discover whether or not we're in good shape. And if we're not, and if we think we're going to lose it, we can come back to the board. But again, given the fact that 12 counties didn't make it this last year and were given exemptions, all 12, 100%.
That was the first year.
Yes, and there's going to be probably, I would guess, 40 or 50 counties are not going to make it this year because everybody's slashing budgets right now. So it's certainly a conundrum, but I guess I would like to, a little bit more time if your board wants to direct the administrative office to work with the Ag Commissioner and looking at this a little more carefully. Within the next month or two, we could come back and make adjustments as necessary if we felt like we were in jeopardy of losing that money.
Okay.
Mr. Gibson? And I was just curious as to what we might be able to find out within the next, let's say, week before we come to a final action on Tuesday the 22nd, if we could get a little more background on this. And I think there are a couple options. And, you know, there's one halftime that's being fully eliminated. That one, Mr. Patterson might remember, was a noxious weed issue that we talked about a couple years ago. The individual in that position works on noxious weed issues that are important to agriculture in this county. So we've got some room in there, but if we could get a little bit of the lay of the land on this statewide as soon as possible, maybe we could make an informed decision before we finalize things on next Tuesday.
We can do that, absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, the gas tax discussions typically occur in the third quarter, so I venture to guess we're not going to learn anything more than the next week. Okay. We just got done deliberating over the current year's check, which comes in the third quarter, so it won't be till the third quarter of next year till we'll have more information in all likelihood.
Mr. Gibson? But would you be able to survey your colleagues and find out what they're looking at with their 10-11 budgets?
As yep. Mr. Grant mentioned, we haven't done a formal survey, but anecdotally, there's many counties that are going to be falling into the same problem.
Okay.
Well, do we want to move on, or do you, we need a tentative straw vote on the ag commissioners in the planning building?
You can do that, or you can wait till you get all through the land-based budgets and take a tentative vote on those.
I think we're developing consensus here on, well, the ag commissioner has no specifics.
Right.
Aside from that, we are going to defer the RCDs till Wednesday, and I'm certainly supportive of the ad issue items coming back, understanding that the revenue is going to be bumped, and just wondered whether admin actually finalized the actual amount of added revenue.
Yes, Mr. Buckshot, can you speak to that?
Yeah, the amount requested to offset the positions would be 150. Yes, it should be. Yeah. The amount required to fund the positions added back would be $155,000. That's what would be recommended to be added back as revenue.
And how much new revenue did they find in the?
It's $297,000. An option for consideration is not to add the full $297,000. Maybe possibly some could be considered for the RCD, should you want to do that on Wednesday. And then also the planning budget over the last few years has been rather volatile. That may allow them a little bit of cushion in their revenue projections to make sure that they come in on budget throughout the year.
And at what point, as Ms. Griffin mentioned, that they would be doing the tracking, at what point would we be able to make a determination whether this is continuing or whether we'll be needing to make an adjustment?
Certainly, it's part of the quarterly reports.
Okay.
Each quarter, we would report on building and planning and building activity. And frankly, there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion this year because their budget and revenue projections were fairly accurate. In the early years of when the economic bust basically began, actual revenues fell far short of projections and budget, and therefore it was a frequent discussion. But this past year, the budget was lowered considerably, so it's accurate.
So part of the revenue that's been determined here, that could be utilized for the RCD backfill and for the budgeting for that?
It's an option, certainly.
Okay.
I believe so.
So if we took a straw vote on this right now, and that's the direction that you have to look to that?
We can work out those details and bring it back Wednesday if you'd
okay.
like.
Okay. Everybody good with that? Okay. I've got 5-0 on that one. All right, let's move into community development. Mr. Grant.
Community development, and we have no comments on that at this point in time, and no, but there is one supplemental document item on S20 of your supplemental document.
I do have one request to speak from the public on this.
And that supplemental document is correction to budgeted amount of federal revenue in the community development area of about $53,000, just technical adjustment for the most part.
Okay. Board, have any questions at this point? I want to open it to the public. Mr. Manchek?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm here just to give a very brief update, not a detailed description of what the EBC has been doing the last year, but more of a perspective of the local economy relative to the budget. And I wasn't prepared to make this, but I would like to make the comment that I think it's an easy thing for often people that aren't involved in the budget decision-making process to poke an eye in the administrative office. And I think that having an organization which is also facing a cut, but at the same time having worked very closely with the administrative office, I can tell the public and I can tell you with a straight face that it's some of the best people I think I've ever worked with. High-level integrity, very involved, and in a time when again, from someone who looks at the economy constantly, it is a very, very challenging time. So I want to commend the administrative office for really some really excellent work. But I'd also like to talk a bit about the forecast for the economy. For those that didn't attend the mid-year economic forecast in Paso Robles, a picture was painted for those that didn't attend or for those that didn't read about this event that the worst is behind us, which is why I think I also commend the budget and the way that this is going about, but also that this recovery is going to be long time. The analogy was given that there is light in the end of the tunnel, but the tunnel is very, very long. So with that, I think that we're doing the right things locally. I think we're going to come around. I think we're going to see the benefits of what are really some smart budget planning. But I also want to mention something that from the business perspective, with all that is going on, with all the fires that are being put out on the county level, what is happening in the business community? What is happening is really several things that surface as serious challenges still. Now, these are challenges that may or may not be relative to the recession. So if we come out of this recession, in other words, we're still faced with some of these challenges. Bank loans, credit. We can't expand the economy unless we can get bank loans. The EBC is an organization for which is the only loan guarantee program in the entire county. So we're seeing a lot of business. We're guaranteeing business loans that need that help. But we're hearing from companies that are very successful in the county that don't need our help, that are saying it's a very precarious situation out there. Now, that's a federal issue. That's not a county issue. But I wanted to give that perspective to you, that that's a challenge that is really out there and is very worrisome for the business community. The other is this issue of critical mass. Still, the business community doesn't have enough neighbors, so to speak. All right? There's not enough companies here that help businesses attract talent. When they're looking to recruit from afar, looking to get experienced people here to work for the companies and to grow these successful companies, they continually say it is very, very hard. Those people say, if not for another job, what else would I do, and therefore I won't come here. The risk is too high. Also, the fact that we've got a workforce housing imbalance. So I think that even if when the recession ends, we're still faced with that issue. We need to look at the business community. The issue of private capital. We were recently involved in what is the starting of the first angel investor network group in the county, which is very exciting. Again, I think that helps the issue of the banking dilemma that we're all facing. That's a national dilemma. In terms of loans, you know, we've guaranteed up to $2.3 million in loans in the last few years and $300,000 in microloans. Microloans being the very small loans addressing the issues and needs of the smallest of businesses in this county. We're a county of 80% or 20 employees or less in this entire county. So it's a very large basket of very small companies. And the smallest of companies find it the most challenging to get those bank loans. That's why we're trying to address that. In terms of the economic strategy, and I'll end with this, I promise to give updates, and I will. I'll give some detailed updates, presentations actually, to this board about the economic strategy project. We are beyond the midpoint of this project. And about 3-4 weeks ago, Supervisors Meacham and Hill met with 110 CEOs from all over the county at 5 meetings. And I have to say, I would have, as I said to some of them, I would have paid to be in there to hear some of these comments. But the comments are those that which will go into the strategy. So we're now in, we've gone past the data collection phase, which you can see a report on that. We're now in the information gathering phase. We're getting input from leaders locally to talk about what are the requirements for growth in their sector. But the report, I think, is very, very interesting. It shows where the job growth has happened since 1995 in this county and the sectors that are growing and how unique they are to SLO County. So with that, I want to stop, but I do want to thank again Adam Hill and Frank Meacham for their support in this project. It is a lot of work. It's the first project we've ever done like this, and we're very positive about the outcome of it. So thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Manchek. I have no other requests to speak at this point. I'll bring it back to the board. Questions, comments?
Next, I think there's much on community development.
Let's move on to public works.
No additional information to present other than what was provided in the overview for land base, that essentially pavement management is being scaled back. There is the technical adjustment for roads in the supplemental budget on S18 that adds funding for 3 roads programs, and just a reminder that this does include the Public Works Special Districts budget as well.
I have a question. I noticed on D28, the replacement vehicles that we're going to be dealing with, we're going to be spending about $1 million on replacement vehicles. And I guess I'm wondering, is this absolutely essential that we do this, or couldn't we use that $1 million to be able to try to help something with the roads? Because our roads are getting further and further behind, and I don't know that can we make these, squeeze another year out of these, and utilize that $1 million for something that we can actually work on?
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director. That money is not available for other road purposes because the Public Works Equipment Pool, which is part of the Internal Service Fund, we collect rental rates whenever we use equipment, and so that is separately held money that can only be used for equipment replacement. We do, in fact, you know, we have been trying to stretch out the number of years and the mileage on all of our equipment as much as possible, so we've been scaling down, but in any case, that money is restricted to only equipment purchases. It goes through some pretty strict accounting in order to make sure that the rental rates balance with the actual vehicle usage, and we have been you know, pushing out the equipment to longer lives and are only making recommendations on those pieces that we believe are really need to be replaced at this time.
Okay. I guess it's just difficult when, I mean, from the public standpoint, then we're not taking care of the road, but we see a new vehicle. That's a little difficult to swallow at times.
Understandable.
Maybe we can Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Ogren's at the microphone there. Mr. Greening was commenting on the use of funds that remain in the road funds for 10-11.
And certainly your board's policies on the expenditure of road money, whether it's for maintenance or capital projects or in safety, I believe are all consistent with Mr. Greening's comments. And so, in fact, you know, when we build the budgets, we make sure that they're consistent with the existing policies where safety is a high priority as well as maintenance. The other comment that Mr. Greening had was sort of with respect to user fees. And I guess in the midst of, you know, the budget challenges at the local and the state level, the little bit of optimism I have at the state level was the changes in the sales tax and the gas taxes and the excise taxes that while it is revenue neutral on a statewide basis, the reason for optimism is that by making the changes that they made, the ability for the state to match its transportation-related revenues and match them up with transportation-related expenditures and what the needs are, I'm hopeful that at least in future years is going to provide for more rational decision-making at the state level. So even though it was revenue neutral, I think it does help push the state program into more of a user fees type of a program, which again was a question that Mr. Greening had asked.
And I would end with just an observation, Mr. Chairman. The roads budget is taking a serious contraction here, and as I've discussed this with constituents, I think most understand that this is so that the balance of programs that the county works on can maintain. I would observe, though, that the roads we have a very clear quantitative measure that we can track the performance on this. This will be a matter of deferred maintenance, and that's what I wanted to emphasize to the public, is that we are in difficult times. This is something that we can track. The pavement condition rating can be tracked, and we know through a lot of good work that the road engineers have done, we can keep track roughly of what kind of deferred maintenance cost we are incurring. So I see this really as a one-time move in a difficult time, and would expect that as things get better, we're going to play catch up here.
And as we defer these, they just get progressively worse, and we all recognize that.
Chairman Meacham, if I might just, you know, one of the other comments that I'd like to address real quickly is, you know, obviously the crews have to have good equipment in order to be able to do a lot of the work that they're doing out there. But there was a comment earlier about, you know, the sacrifices management is taking. And so this past year in Public Works, one of our deputy directors, Glenn Pretty, retired. And so as a conscientious move to help, you know, minimize our costs and road fund costs and those costs that come from the office or overhead, it has been a conscientious decision to not backfill that management position. And so we've gone from two deputy directors to one deputy director. And the overall management team as well is having to make adjustments, just as the guys out in the field are.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My fear is twofold, that I know what you're going through. I know what we're going through. Don't have much to say about the equipment. For a moment, I thought maybe we can borrow money from the equipment department and put it into the roads. But as we defer maintenance, it's not like we can come back another day then just do maintenance. It's just going to cost us that much more money to bring it as where it needs to be. So I would have liked to have seen some
construction maintenance move forward to a point where later on catch-up wouldn't be much more expensive and we'll be playing catch-up for the rest of the years to come?
Yeah, certainly it's a challenging equation. And so, you know, continuing to focus the pavement management money that we have on the higher priority needs is part of the equation. And then on some of the other roads that are falling into more disrepair, how can we modify programs to at least maintain some minimum type of level of repair? One of the examples there is that our road crews worked in conjunction with private contractors this year in order to do more chip sealing than we've been able to do in the past. And there's other techniques that we're going to have to continue to work on to, you know, try to do keep up the job with less resources.
Thank you. Any other questions? I have nobody from the public on this one. That pretty much concludes the all of the land-based budgets.
I'd make a tentative motion to approve the land-based budgets with the amendments and staff direction that we've given.
I have a motion by Supervisor Gibson and a second by Supervisor Patterson to approve the land-based budgets with the amendments that's been suggested. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, let's move into the public protection budgets. Buckshy.
Okay. Moving into public protection, the brief overview is that it does comprise about 27% of the total budget at about $122 million and about 30% of total county positions. There are 17 proposed for elimination, 8 from the Sheriff's Department, 9 from the Probation Department. All are vacant. No layoffs would occur as a result of these position eliminations. And the last point is something that's important to note, is that these budgets are still actually growing from a general fund perspective, whereas other departments, which are not as high a priority as public safety, are shrinking on average between 3 and 5%. The general fund support for this group of departments, the four as a whole, is actually increasing 2%. It does vary amongst the four departments a bit. Unfortunately, revenues from the state have been dropping, and that's part of the reason why the position cuts are required. The Prop 172, which is a sales based on sales tax receipts, which is provided by the state, has been down considerably, and vehicle license fee revenue is about 15 to 20% off of what was previously projected. Looking at the service level impacts, district attorney and fire, full staffing does remain, and this has been the case for the past 2 years as well. So the 3 years into our fiscal pain plan, if you will, full staffing has remained for these two departments. The jail, a couple of correctional positions are proposed for elimination. However, the required safety standards are expected to be met even with these reductions. And lastly, probation, they've done some internal reorganization in order to streamline their management structure and save some money along the lines of about $150,000, I believe. And lastly, there will be some increased caseloads due to the elimination of some deputy probation officers. That is the overview for public safety.
Questions from the board at this point? No questions. Okay. Anybody from the public? Seeing none. Everybody's nice and quiet, except for Mr. Asad. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, I just want to make a comment, if I may. First of all, I appreciate the effort that all of the departments have made to maintain a high level of service for the community, becoming more efficient and doing the work that they do with really fewer people. And even though the general fund support has increased, as Mr. Buckshy pointed out, revenue declines because of grant funding from the state and federal government. I particularly want to thank Jim Salio and probation and all the probation officers, because I know that that department, I think, proportionally has probably been hit the hardest in terms of staff reductions, simply because so much of their funding did come from sources other than county government. And I've worked with many of those officers when I was in my North County office. My first term, I actually held my office hours at the North County Probation Office, and I know how dedicated those individuals are in doing the work that they do. And as was pointed out in the presentation, the impact that this budget is going to have on those folks is higher caseloads, and so they're going to have to work that much harder. And hopefully we'll get through this in a year or two, and we can relax that a little bit. But in the interim, I just want to say that I do appreciate the work that all the departments have done. And also, I don't think we want to go beyond this section without recognizing CAL FIRE and the good work that they continually do in providing the service and doing it with the same amount of revenue or less, actually, than they have in previous years. So thank you for that.
Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't know if we were going to go through this department, because I had a specific question for CAL FIRE and a couple specific questions for Sheriff.
Mr. Grant. Yes, thank you. Jim Grant, County Administrator. I would recommend, Mr. Chair, that as you look through this block of public protection budgets, that you maybe at least announce each budget
one, yeah,
and then ask for questions and then move on to the next one.
That's what I was going to go through next. But,
right. And I'll hold.
You hold?
Yeah.
You're very good.
Okay.
You good, Mr. Sajjan, until I get to the next one?
That's fine.
Okay.
Chair, which way?
All right. On animal services, any questions, comments? Child support? Court operations? County Fire? Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if one of our fine chiefs would just give us I'll talk as much as possible so Chief Jenkins gets down here. Just a quick question, since one of the issues has to do with the completing of the Fire Protection Master Plan, I wonder if you could give us just a brief update on its status and when we expect to see that.
I'd be happy to. Matt Jenkins, Chief, CAL FIRE, County Fire. Yeah, our master plan is way behind schedule, and we contracted with the firm ESCI to produce the plan. They had some internal issues that we had to reassign the project to a new principal. That principal passed away suddenly in the middle of the project, and so we have renewed the effort. In fact, we're expecting the plan to be delivered next month in July. Actually, the president of the company has taken over the project and working directly with us and with our analyst. So we do expect for you to see a master plan by July.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, Matt. Any other questions for CAL FIRE? Thank you, sir. District Attorney's Office? Grand Jury? I did notice in the grand jury's report we're going to spend about $5,000 on new tables.
But have you sat at those tables?
No, thank God. Probation. And once again, Mr. Salio, thank you. As all of you, I didn't mean to single one person out. Public Defenders. Sheriff Corner. Waste Management.
I have a question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered if somebody from, well, perhaps admin could speak to this. It depends. Here is our sheriff. In the Sheriff Corner's goals and performance measures, the recurring comment from 9 of the 10 on the how are we doing talks of the issue of the 15 positions that did that were eliminated and how that might affect a variety of different performance measures. And I guess I wanted to know if we were going to be able to specifically track that next year and the future year, because since that's recurring in 9 of the 10, I think from our perspective, we'd like to know if that's the case. If, in fact, next year you can see that the elimination of positions has affected some of these areas and specifically how, that kind of analysis, I think, would be helpful for us, obviously, from your department's perspective. You see this is going to have an impact. We'd like to know.
Certainly. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Corner, and we can specifically track those. The fact that the cuts are from a number of different positions throughout the department will mean that it will have an impact across the department, so that's why there is an impact on a number of those measures. But we can provide, we will provide those specifics as far as what the impacts are, because we're already dealing with them because those positions are currently vacant.
Okay, because I think that would be very helpful for us to have a little better analysis on that.
Absolutely.
If I could just add to that just a bit more broadly, you hit the nail on the head with, in terms of the intent of the performance measures overall for all departments is to track the key performance of the various operations so that we can help determine in the future when decisions are made either to cut or, in some cases, when resources are added, what the bottom line impact is to the outcomes to the community, and certainly we would do that for the Sheriff's Department, but we would do it for all departments.
I would assume, too, we're still going to, as we go through the budget and through the state's budget and what the governor's proposing from the releases and kind of crowding our jails here, there's going to be an impact to our local area as well. And what type of a financial impact to us, I guess we at this point don't know, but I'm sure that it will be significant. And speaking with a couple of the other law enforcement agencies in the county, in the North County in particular, they're down people as well. It's Paso PD, I think, down 10 positions right now. So everybody's going through this difficult time, and so we appreciate the effort that all of you are putting forward in this regard. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in a specific example, one of the other things that I'm seeing is great collaboration between departments, specifically the Anti-Gang Coordinating Commission has been really a pleasure to watch as it evolves. Collaborative effort of probation, the DA, and the Sheriff's Department, and having talked to many of those who work in the field and in a variety of both prevention and enforcement areas, I'm really impressed at the enthusiasm that these departments are showing in moving forward with this. I think we're getting great cost-effective results. I'd like to, you know, we'd like to revisit that in a little more detail. For instance, is the graffiti removal trailer that the sheriff's going to. We see these little pieces starting to fall into a bigger picture of efficiency and effectiveness as well. So
and the narcotics task force as well. They've been doing a great job as well. Mr. Saju?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even though we're moving forward with all this positive input from our law enforcement and public safety folks, including child support services, but my concern doesn't end with this budgetary issues here in front of us, because I'm concerned, and if I change my hat to a different positions I hold in the community, I see more problems coming our way. More theft is happening. More crime is taking place. We're not asking folks to do more with less people power, but that more is going to increase on a different levels as well. And if the more inmates hit the roads on an early release, we shouldn't ignore those facts, and I think we should be more concerned and revisit our law enforcement and public safety. And I bring child support services into the picture, because when people have less jobs and can feed less of their beloved ones, those are going to be hit hard too, and they're going to need more of those services. So I'm concerned moving forward, even though we're here to balance the budget and appreciative of all the efforts coming to us from different departments, that it's not going to end there. We need to look into this more often than the usual to see what has this additional load has done to your departments. And my expectation of during tough times when things get a little tougher out there, if we're turning our backs on you at one time or the other, so I like to maintain our level of communications at all levels, even earlier than quarterly, to see that with this budget, if you're still able to move forward with the comfort level that you show us here today, but the picture might change and we might have to reconsider some of our actions here today. I'm thankful, but at the same time, I'm concerned.
I think that kind of lends itself to Supervisor Hill's comment as far as getting the tracking on these and seeing where we are. Once again, speaking to the North County folks up there, violent crimes have been down, but they have seen an increase in some of the robberies and some of the burglaries and things like that. So that probably goes to your point in that
that regard.
Mr. Hill? And I will say, following up on what Supervisor Sajjan's concerns are, that looking through what we have in terms of performance measures from our law enforcement agencies, our public safety agencies, it shows that they're managing to do quite a good job of keeping our public safe and protected, and reducing recidivism and a lot of other areas that are of great concern, even in this difficult time that I guess we're in the third year of a very difficult budgetary time. So I certainly I commend our different agency heads for being able to figure out how to continue to do this.
Yeah, it goes beyond that. If we watch our neighboring counties, which has an influence on the entryway to gang and violence from north and south, and what's happening to their budget and what's happening to their sheriff's department, those are scary times that, again, kudos to our folks in the law enforcement, public safety, and all of the above, but please stay in touch, because if it gets out of hand, we need not to take a whole year to come back and see what happened and why are we behind, and catching up is going to be much more difficult and much more expensive.
Okay. The key might be to make sure that you give Supervisor Gibson as many ride-alongs that allow him to wear a bulletproof vest as possible.
I'm always here to help Supervisor Hill. Okay, no more comment on the Sheriff Corner. 136 Fund Center, how about 130 Waste Management? Any comments there?
Good job.
Okay, I see none from the public. I'd entertain we want to just do a straw vote.
Well, tentative motion.
Tentative approval on the public protection budgets. I have a motion by Supervisor Sajjan.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Gibson. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Let's move into Health and Human Sewer Services.
Okay, Health and Human Services. You can see here this is the biggest portion of the county budget at about 40% or $170 million. And there are about 830 total positions between these two agencies, social services and the health agency. Six positions are proposed for elimination. I do want to note that number is a bit misleading, because there are two outside operations that have been run by not-for-profit organizations that are being brought in-house, and I'll speak to that in just a moment. If you offset the influx of those positions, it's really closer to 13 or 14 positions that are proposed for elimination in health agency and social services. Looking at some of the impacts, I mentioned the two operations that are being brought in-house are the EMSA, or Emergency Medical Services Agency. Federal law changed that requires that a governmental operation, I believe, do the certification of paramedics, which was one of the primary functions of the agency, and it can no longer be done by a not-for-profit organization. Therefore, it's being proposed to be brought in-house. And the second is Martha's Place, which is a program that was created about 4 years ago to provide screening and treatment to kids who are exposed to alcohol during pregnancy. CAPSLO has administered that program since its inception. A few months back, they notified the county and others that they would no longer be willing to oversee and administer that program. No other not-for-profits were willing to do so. So the only option was, two options were either to eliminate the program or to bring it in-house, and the proposal before you today is to bring that in-house in order to continue providing those services. On a positive note, I think it's one of the more positive things that is in the budget, actually, is a proposal to add an oral health program manager. This does not require any general fund grants and other outside funding were received, and about 1,200 children, if this program is successful, would receive 3 fluoride treatments per year. Cavities amongst young children is a major problem amongst lower-income families, and this would help those children receive dental care. We also work with over 100 parents to help them receive dental services in general for dentists who typically would not take these types of clients. So that is, or patients rather, that is the intent of this program, and again, no general fund cost. And lastly, just a cautionary note. The FMAP, as you can see here, is federal stimulus funding that is currently slated to expire on December 31st of this year. There's been legislation on the table as part of the discussion, federal budget discussions, to extend this through June 30th, 2011. Ourselves and most other counties did include the additional revenue through June 30th of 2011. It's about $830,000 between health agency and social services that if the extension is not granted, we would be short on that revenue. The reason it was built in at that point in time, it looked as if it was a done deal based upon information from our federal lobbyists, from CSAC, from other sources throughout the various agencies we work with. But it's not 100% done at this point in time. It is something actually governors of various states are pushing on. This would impact not only us, it would impact every state in the country that receives this federal funding at this point in time. So just something to note, we'll be tracking this closely and would obviously report to your board if there were any further changes along those lines. And just as a note, these two operations, health agency and social services, could be substantially impacted by the state budget, more so than any other operation, just because so much of the funding for these operations does come from the state. Shifting gears a bit into the social services realm, another positive note, the Workforce Investment Act, this is all federal funding. It has been expanded here in recent years, and it's part of getting people back to work to provide employment and training programs. And there are proposed to add three positions in the Department of Social Services to administer this program. As you may recall, I think it was a year ago, it may already be 2 years ago, this used to be run by a not-for-profit organization, was brought in-house, and frankly, it's been quite successful. It's been administered at roughly half to two-thirds of the cost that the not-for-profit ran the program for, and services in general have improved, so this is a good thing. And lastly, just a note, nothing we can really do about it. There was a lawsuit by, I believe, one of the foster care agencies that run group homes to State Department of Social Services. Do you want to emphasize it was the state, not the county? And basically said group home rates had been set too low, were not at a proper level. The lawsuit, they were successful, and rates were then increased. The state sets those rates. Bottom line for our county is $1 million of expense. Two-thirds of it is offset with federal and state revenue, but it did result in an increase of $370,000 of general fund. These are mandated costs. We have no option but to pay that at this point in time. And that concludes the overview for Health and Human Services.
Okay. I have one request to speak on this. Mr. Green?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and as you know, I would prefer now that you have prioritized public safety above other county programs that the programs in this category be considered as public safety programs. Mr. Caldwell raised an interesting point, which is if a crime is being committed and your life is in danger, what's an acceptable response time? You want someone there. And obviously that is true. The point I would like to raise is how often is someone's life in danger due to a crime versus how often is someone's life in danger due to a medical issue? How many lives are saved in each category each year? We do know that all of us are mortal, and when we go, most of us go not because of a crime, but because of a medical issue. And certainly, it's just a perspective to put on if we're going to talk about saving lives, just to keep this in perspective. And it's not just the medical side. You think about CalWORKs. What if people had no income whatsoever? Are we thankful to be living in a country where you don't see people dying of hunger in the street? Foster care. If children are growing up in unsafe environments where their life is in danger, are we better off knowing that there are places they can go or not? All of these are public safety issues, and so just speaking generically to this category, I hope we keep that in mind, and I hope we also keep that in mind as the year goes on and we deal with whatever the fallout is from the state. And I hope we keep it in mind when we're communicating with the state. This is all public safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Collins, do you have... Oh, he's just picking up after you. I'll bring it back to the board. Any questions at this point on, I'm not going to read every single one of these, but in the Department of Health and Human Services budgets, do we have any questions, comments at this point?
No tentative approval.
I have a motion to approve tentative approval. I have a second.
Second.
I have a second. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, community services budgets.
Okay, moving on to community services. As you can see, this is a much smaller portion of the overall budget at about 4%. There are two positions that are slated for elimination. Again, these are vacant positions. Those two positions are in the airport. These positions have been vacant for some time. The elimination is not expected to impact service levels negatively. And in discussions with the airport, the plan is to closely watch the business at the airport. As your board knows, we've been reporting on that as part of the quarterly reports. And should business resume and it be necessary to add positions in order to maintain the safety requirements, we would certainly do that and bring options back to your board in order to do that. But at this point in time, based upon activity at the airport, the two positions are not believed to be needed. I do want to point out, as you can see, the third bullet point on this slide, that the airport has requested a little over $100,000 of funding in order to keep it operating at a break-even basis. Otherwise, they would be in the red to the tune of about $115,000. This is that would be the first year that an operational subsidy essentially would be required for the airport. In the current year, as your board may recall, $500,000 was loaned as part of the tax reduction reserve. That was to close out some activity related to prior terminal design and construction. This is actually for operations. So a positive note, parks, that it is proposed, while there is a proposed decrease in the amount of general fund support equal to 5%, does allow for some increased maintenance above prior years and does maintain overall service levels. And then lastly, libraries, unlike prior years, open hours and services are maintained. They're using a balance of some of their reserves as well as some expenditure cuts in order to mitigate the need to reduce hours and services. And that completes the overview for this group.
Just quickly, I know Supervisor Gibson brought this up before about the airport and the money that's set aside there, and somebody was going to come back with, do they actually need that? If they don't, obviously there's a number of other areas that we could utilize that funding. Have we received anything at this point?
Yeah, the airport staff is currently working on that. The intention is to come back to your board, you know, early in the new fiscal year with that information.
Okay. I have one request from the audience, Mr. Greening. And I think another one.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and just want to make a couple of comments on a couple of pieces of this. I'm glad to see the hanging in there with both the parks and the libraries in this difficult climate that we're in. And I would point out, relative to parks, that to the extent that we are serious about the strategic growth principles that we have adopted and are implementing and the various other plans that are embodying those principles, to the extent that a larger proportion of our population is expected to live with less private open space around their dwellings, that increases the need for public open space. And so we should always be aware that when we get to more fortunate times, this is an important priority to backfill. When it comes to libraries, again, I'm glad to see that we're hanging in there, but obviously there have been a lot of cuts that it would be nice to put back sometime. And a lot of the people who work in our libraries are among the most frugally paid of all of our county employees, and we should remember that. Putting it in perspective, schools are over 40% of the state budget. That chunk of education, and then if you add universities and so on, that's just K-12 universities, we're getting up to close to 50%. I certainly don't begrudge them any of it, but the only educational institutions open to all the people of any age, registered students or not, are the public libraries. The knowledge
of civilization is made available to all of us through the public libraries. Compared to the official budgets that we call education statewide, what libraries get is about like this. And so anytime we can be generous with the ability of the entire public to have access to information, we are increasing the information available to the public as we assimilate, react to, and help guide the decisions that you and other public bodies make. And the quality of the information available to us will be reflected in the quality of the policies and the quality of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim Daniels, please.
Good morning, yet again. I just wanted to address the issue on the libraries briefly, because what this budget doesn't reflect is 1.25 full-time equivalent positions that will be eliminated effective June 30th because SLOSIA represented employees saved those positions from elimination during this fiscal year. That's 2,600 hours of staff time that will go away. At a time when library usage has gone up anywhere from 25% to 40%, depending on who you speak with, I am again requesting that your board direct staff to meet with the association to discuss methods that we can utilize to ensure these positions remain intact and that we not lose staff at a time when usage has increased dramatically. We are not done being able to work together to save positions from elimination. So I'm respectfully requesting that you direct your staff to meet with the association and see what can be done about saving these positions. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, bring it back to the board. Let's go through these one at a time on the airports. Any questions, comments? Okay, farm advisor, fish and game, golf courses, library.
On the matter of the library, okay.
Mr. Gibson and then Mr. Patterson.
I was curious if the library director could comment briefly on how we're doing in terms of hours of operation and what the look ahead is here.
Good morning, Honorable Board. Brian Reynolds, Library Director. We hope that we're done with the layoffs. As Ms. Daniels said, we're losing close to two positions at the end of the month. We probably are looking at some open hour reductions in three or four of our branches in the range of 1 hour a week, maybe two. I do see two positive things on the horizon. One is that I hope our revenues have hit bottom, because as you know, we're mostly dependent on property taxes. About 80% of our revenues are that. And then the other bright spot, I think, is our investigation into the Mission Critical Volunteer Program, which we're getting started in Rio Grande this month. And they, I hope, will provide some relief to existing staff and protect the open hours that we do have. So overall, I'm cautiously optimistic.
My understanding, A, that the volunteers are not there to replace staff, but rather to extend the services the library is going to...
Yes, there's no quid pro quo on that at all. We're trying to recruit a new level of volunteers that will allow staff to do more advanced duties and also allow some of the staff, especially the branch managers, to get out of the building and promote the library in the community. So, yes, we're adding volunteers, and we hope we're at the end of layoffs, but there is no connection between the two.
And at what point do you revisit your open hours? How you said that you were looking ahead, that might be a possibility. Is that with the budget, or is that on a different cycle?
Well, that would be pretty much when we're able to increase our FTE levels via volunteers or any other source. So we look at that fairly regularly, but we're looking at the big three libraries along the freeway as participating in this volunteer program with some excellent help from Paso Robles Public Library staff. And so we hope to have the big three done by December. So I would hope by early of 2011, if we can be successful in this, we would be boosting things back up.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Mr.
rentals, because I did hear back from Paso volunteer coordinator, said she was excited about assisting with help trying to establish the volunteer program further, so that looks promising.
Right, we have her as a contractor for about the next 6 months.
Patterson?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Reynolds, you mentioned a possible reduction in hours at some of the libraries, but in the opening comment on community services, it was stated that we likely wouldn't have any reduction in hours. So I'm curious to what's going to happen with that.
We had hoped that we either wouldn't have the layoffs or we would have the volunteer program further along than we do. But anyways, we're at this crunch time now where we're very thinly staffed, at or below staff minimums. We are operating with about six fewer positions than we had a year ago, and by July 1st, it'll be approximately an additional two positions. So I don't think we can sustain that until we get a higher level of staff support, be it, as I said earlier, volunteers or paid staff.
Ms. Daniels suggested working with Lucia to find ways to not have to lay those two positions off. Has admin done that? Have you worked with them to find opportunities to save those positions?
Mr. Grant?
Yes, Jim Grant, County Administrator. This is part of negotiations, so we haven't sat down on an individual basis, no. It would be part of negotiations and whether the two sides basically could come together in some sort of agreement that we could work out. So it hasn't happened. I will say again that we need to separate this out into this current fiscal year where Slocia did step up, deferred their salary, and it was very successful in that earlier in the year we thought there would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 positions going away. It's down to just a handful right now. So it was successful, but Slocia just did defer the cost of living increase, meaning that at some point in time it would come back. So it was a one, you know, I mean, we're looking at it that if we wanted to sit back down at the table through negotiations, that's a perfectly acceptable thing to do, but at this point I can't speak directly to that because that would be, this is negotiations and those are behind closed doors.
Okay, and is it possible for that to occur before July 1 when these positions do go away?
Oh, we can look into that, certainly, and talk with HR in terms of proceeding with that and seeing what can be done.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is more for my own edification. As Mr. Reynolds pointed out, the budget points out that the library is largely dependent on property tax revenues, and I wondered, when we look at how the local property tax is broken up on 829, you know, a lot of people are under the impression somehow that the county, you know, we for our general fund, 24 cents on the dollar is what we get, and I wondered how it is that what's the formula for the library's revenues out of the money the county derives, because I'm just curious about how that...
The more general answer is that the library had fallen part of that 6% that is part of the
special
districts.
Okay.
What their exact, you know, tenth of a decimal point is, I'm not exactly sure, to be honest.
Somebody's looming to tell me.
Mr. Seabach.
If you're interested, yeah.
Always.
Jerry Seabach, County Auditor Controller. Dates clear back to 1978 and 79. The Prop 13 passed. At that time, the county library in our county, with the exception of Paso Robles, had its own tax rate. The county general fund had a county-run tax rate, and the library, less Paso Robles, had its own tax rate. And the way the state legislature dealt with Prop 13 was that everybody basically, whatever proportion of the tax in their area they had before, they just had the same, essentially the same proportion of a much smaller tax rate, pot. So it dates clear back to then. Our library benefited greatly during the 80s when Diablo Canyon was coming online and the property values were growing and Diablo Canyon was in of course, the library district. So their revenues grew a lot. Since that has flattened out and they've been following the residential and business, just growth and contraction in the residential and business property tax other than in Paso Robles. So they have had a flat spot here for the last 2 years, very little growth or slightly negative in property tax, and we don't know what will happen next year, but that's the way it happened. It isn't a decision that was made by anybody locally about that proportion, except for back in the early and middle 70s when they decided what they wanted to have that tax rate be for library support.
Well, Mr. Seabrook, sir.
Sure.
So if I could, Jerry, let me ask if Diablo Canyon is in fact relicensed, does that affect their valuation, therefore increasing the taxes they pay and perhaps...
Well, we don't know. They have had some increase because they've made investments.
Right.
But then part of that gets shared with the rest of the northern part of California because it's a part of a unitary tax system. my view is I believe that's something that we may be talking to the Board of Equalization about at some point, is if you had a nuclear power plant that you knew was going to shut down next year, how much would you pay for that? Almost nothing. But if you had the same plant and you knew it had 20 more years to run, it seems like it's worth a lot more money, especially when it's a profitable one like Diablo is, and especially if it's one that is a critical part of the California power grid like Diablo is. So we will be making that argument, and the library and the county, Cuesta College, County Office of Education, San Luis Coastal School Districts would all benefit from that if we achieve that kind of an argument or make that argument stick.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Seabrook, I have a question. In regard to libraries that are located in incorporated cities that the county operates, does the county get all of that property tax, or does part of that go to the cities in which they're located?
The county library gets that factor within each of the cities, with the exception of Paso Robles, because Paso Robles opted out of the county system many years ago.
And then,
so we don't share it with the city. The cities get what the cities get, and the library gets what the library gets.
But then, in turn, do the cities participate financially to the county libraries?
No, other than that's their proportion of the tax in their city, in theory, would be a little bit less because of the library getting some amount.
To your question, I believe that do the cities share in the cost of providing library services? It depends on the city. San Luis Obispo gives a small amount of money to the system itself. In terms of Morro Bay owns the library that the library resides in, so they're, in sense, in kind, giving us something for $1 a year. So depending on the area, it depends, but it's nothing, there's no sharing ratio that is set for that.
Okay, well, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think that the incorporated city should be participatory much greater than the library system as opposed to those that are not, because that's part of the county's role, is to provide that library service in the unincorporated areas. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I don't see any. Oh, Mr. Gibson, you have a question.
Just indicate that I would agree, and looking at the details of the library funding, the general fund this year proposed to put $674,000+ in, whereas the library fund, which is that specific cut of the property taxes, is pretty close to $8 million. So there's a complex funding formula there, but I believe you're right, Mr. Chairman. We need to seek an even broader basis.
Okay, we'll move down to parks. Speaking of parks, by the way, last Friday, Supervisor Patterson and I were privileged to attend a dedication for the Duvenek family's dedication of 81 acres to the county for a park. And let me tell you, what a beautiful sight. Absolutely beautiful sight. So that was a wonderful opportunity. Do I have any questions in parks at this point? Wildlife and grazing? Okay, I'd entertain a tentative motion to approve the community services budgets.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Sajjan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we're right at the 12 o'clock hour. You want to take a break? Okay, let's break for lunch. Can we do closed session?
We would recommend that we're planning on doing closed session on Tuesday instead of today, if that's satisfactory to the board.
Well, the only question that I have is we have very little left to go on this budget. I have a good idea that we're going to be able to get through this by the end of the day. And then if that's all we have tomorrow...
We're looking at probably an hour and a half or possibly longer of closed session. So.
Okay, early. We can do it first thing in the morning.
And the public comment, right?
Okay, we're going to break for lunch. We'll be back at 1:30. Thank you. The afternoon session. I thought Mr. Asajian wasn't going to make it there for a minute. We were going to take some stuff from your budget and move it around there, buddy. But and I had a couple of requests, so. Okay.
No problem. I brought my check with me.
But you want to talk a little bit about the closed session, how we're going to deal with that rather than.
I'll hand it over to County Council.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. Mr. Jensen?
Yes. Warren Jensen, County Council. We believe Wednesday after the scheduled proceedings would be a good time to do that.
Okay.
Ms. Duckley Schatz is essential for the closed session. She's not available today.
Okay.
So she'll be here in a little while, but she left home with a sick child, and she's scrambling to get here for her budget.
But do we need to re-notice this?
No, we don't think so. We can just continue what's been scheduled for today till Wednesday.
Very good. All right, let's move into the afternoon session. We're going to go into the fiscal and administrative budgets.
Pull up the PowerPoint.
Okay. Good afternoon. Okay, fiscal administrative, again, comprises a much smaller portion of the budget than some of the other areas we've discussed in the morning. About 5% or $23 million, a total of about 195 positions, of which three are proposed for elimination, two of which are in the assessor's office, and one is in the auditor controller's office. Again, these are vacant positions. No layoffs would occur as a result of this. Service level impacts, there may be some impact to the time required to complete the tax roll. We don't believe that it will overall negatively affect the amount of property taxes we're able to collect in 10-11, that we should still be able to meet the overall target. It wouldn't be that substantial, but we are getting to the point with the assessor's office where, you know, further cuts into the future may jeopardize our ability to assess taxes so that we can get them on the roll. So we'll be looking at that in the upcoming year as an area of whether or not any additional cuts could be made. And then, as previously noted, in the organizational development fund, that the general fund that's traditionally been allocated to that has been redirected to help balance the overall operating budget, and reserves that have been set aside for this activity would be used. Now, this would be the third year in a row we've done that. There are enough reserves to do that for about three more years, but then we would deplete that. So in the next year or two, we'll have to revisit that strategy. We may not be able to continue to do that. And that completes the overview of the fiscal and administrative section.
Okay, do I have questions from the board at this time? Don't see any. I'm going to go to the public. I have Kim Daniels. That's the only one I have. Good afternoon.
And I do get to say good afternoon now. I just have some questions. Labor relations was formerly housed in the administrative office, and there are costs and staff associated with performing labor relations responsibilities. During the past fiscal year, labor relations was transferred to human resources. But it does not appear that the funding for labor relations that was assigned to the administrative office has been transferred from the admin office to HR. I also question why we're cutting the budget for the assessor's office. In his comments in the budget, the CAO acknowledges that the workload has increased and cutting the budget means there may be delays in updating and completing the property tax assessment roll, which may mean delays in the collection of property taxes. So I don't understand why we appear to have the admin office relatively superfunded, and we're cutting costs or cutting funding in the assessor's office when, the workload has increased. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. That'll bring it back forward. Mr. Grant?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Grant, County Administrator. I'd like to go ahead and respond to those questions from Ms. Daniels. It is true that labor was housed in the administrative office for a number of years. Originally, many years ago, probably about 5 to 6 years ago, it was in HR. It was transferred to the administrative office, who took control of that. As you board knows, that there was some issues with the labor component of our residing in administration, and that caused some problems along the way. The assistant county administrator was terminated, and the labor program was basically gutted at that point in time. And that was last year in the May time frame, or a little earlier. Once I came in, I took a look at it. The program itself was at one or two other individuals, one actually working in labor. I felt like the labor program ultimately belonged back in HR, where I thought it would structurally be a better place to house it. And so we moved labor back there. I then did a bit of reorganizing within the office itself to reduce our budget by over about $85,000 by reorganizing and lowering some of the higher level positions that were in the office. I took and made those lower level positions to save that money. Additionally, we'd saved this year over $400,000 in salary savings. Part of that we used to hire a labor contract that was used to offset that labor contract that we're using right now in HR. So, and finally, what we have still within the budget, but it is a vacant position that was to be used for labor that is unfunded, or it is a vacant position right now that I'm considering once we get a little more time under our belt in terms of how our labor is going to work in HR, I'm willing to actually remove that position from the position allocation list altogether. So that's what I've done so far, and we constantly look for ways in which we can save money within the budget. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this matter, the contract for our labor negotiating representatives, the outside firm that's doing that, is that in the admin budget or in the HR budget?
No, it was. It's in the HR budget for this next fiscal year.
It is
year.
In the HR budget.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I have questions elsewhere in this part, but if we're on this subject, I'll be happy to.
Mr. Hill?
Oh, I also have questions on that, not on this specific issue, but
okay, we'll go through
on the admin office.
Though. Okay. All right, let's go through each of these on the admin office. Questions? Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan or Jim, on 241, D-241, goals and performance measures, specifically on contingencies and reserves. Two quick questions. One of the comments has to do, and this is performance measure number two, industry standard target is to have 20% reserve contingency as a percent of the operating budget. That makes sense to me. Just wanted to know more specifically what's the industry standard, or who set the industry standard. Is that CSAC? Is it one of our rating agencies?
It's all of the above, more or less. It's ICMA, or International City, County, and Managers, City and County Managers Association, as well as GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers Association. And then, of course, the bond agencies look at that very closely. City of San Luis Obispo formally has a 20% reserve level that they've targeted. When you start getting too much below that, then the rating agencies take a real close look at that number.
So we're at 17.8, relatively close, and obviously we've had a drawdown reserves and contingencies the last few years and may need to do so for another year or two. Do we have a any strategy or sense of how long it'll take to, once there's not a deficit, it'll take to build back our contingencies and reserves?
That's a great question. You know, the target is to keep it above 15% at any point in time, and then to eventually get back to around the 20% level. But, you know, hopefully if, you know, everything goes according to plan, 13, 14, we could start adding back. At what rate, you know, remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. But, and so 15 is pretty much the lowest you go before it might affect.
Well, you know, there are some cities and counties that have only a couple percent, but their bond ratings are low, they have difficulty accessing the markets, they don't have any ability, or very little ability, I should say, to address any unplanned foreseen issues that occur during the year and would have to cut operating budgets in order to deal with that. The idea behind having ample reserves and contingencies is to not have to gut programs for some unforeseen events.
Thank you.
Oftentimes it's a mixed message in a sense. I know I was mayor at Paso, I requested that we kick ours up to 20%, but we stayed at 15. But the comment from the public is, well, you have our money, why don't you spend it? So there's an argument to both sides of that, but I do believe in trying to maintain a good, solid, and a good, stable reserve if we can do that. Any other questions on the admin? Organizational development? Assessor's office?
Actually, if I could back up briefly, and I didn't trap this exactly, but we've been funding organizational development out of reserves rather than the general fund. We're going to do that again this year. I guess one question is, how much longer can we continue in that mode? And in doing so, how has it affected our ability to provide training for?
I think we could do this for about 3 to 4 more years, but that would completely exhaust the reserve. I wouldn't necessarily recommend we do that. I think we ought to keep at least a couple $100,000 in there for unknown. To this point, we've been able to generally fund the activities that we have done prior to redirecting the general fund because we've tapped into the reserves. I think the question next year and the year after is, do we continue to keep the program is further tapping into reserves? Do we allocate some general fund, or do we scale back the program considerably? One of the budget balancing strategies that your board and staff has adopted is to try to maintain at least an adequate fundamental level of training for employees so that people can keep their skills up to date. The employee university is a generally less expensive way to go than having to travel out of the area, out of state in some cases, to receive that training. And as we have less employees, it's important to keep those skills up to date because people are asked to do more with less, and training becomes even more important.
Seems like a particularly important component was our supervisory training, and Lord knows supervisors need training, but we're actually talking about real supervisors. Well, it gets complicated, but our first level of management would be called supervisors. And I tried, is that included in this, or is this a basic HR function as well?
That is part of this program as well.
Look forward to seeing that continue.
Good?
That's it.
Okay. The assessor's office? Auditor controller?
I have a comment on assessor's office, Mr. Chair. I think administration brief reporting was very correct. My thinking is, obviously, with the changes of property values, they're going to get busier, and do we have enough to support their department without getting our constituency real upset about delays and things of that nature? I know they're doing a great job, but overall, I'm a little worried that the number they have as we speak might not even be sufficient for the time being.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, at this point in time, there is a bit of a backlog due to the Prop 8 reassessments. When properties go down, the law dictates that those need to be reassessed. There are about 40,000 properties that have had that decline in value that actually, I believe, take priority over the general assessments. Those have to be done. The challenge, I think, with the assessor's office is the boom and bust cycle. During the boom times, couldn't hire enough people to keep up with the assessment. And then when the money shrivels up and cuts are made, you still have to do the downside assessments or the Prop 8s, which is a considerably higher workload. We think, and I see Mr. Bordenaro is coming up, we've struck the balance, so to speak, where we can more or less keep up with activity, but future cuts may not be possible in order to keep up with the role.
No,
don't know which one these mics are on.
You're on.
You're on.
You're okay with
that? Yeah.
We are experiencing a little bit of a backlog that is starting to build, but we believe that we can take care of that by, we're actually, if you look at the budget, we're asking for a property transfer tech 3 because some of the leasehold possessory interest were backlogged. If we can get that position, which is in there, we can help on that.
One second, Tom. One second. I think he needs to adjust the microphone.
Okay.
We need to lower the other one.
Yeah, lower the other.
The green light is on.
You can lower that one there.
Just, I'm hearing ringing already, so I'll just give this to you.
How's that?
There we go.
Okay. We believe that the market, at least the lower end of the market, has flattened out. We're kind of waiting to see what happens with the upper end, the $1 million plus homes. But we believe that the basic residential market has stabilized. And so we don't see a recovery for a while. But we do believe that with our mass appraisal module and some of the computer things that we have done that assist our appraisers, that we'll be able to keep up on those backlogs. We're not experiencing a real high, my worry was a real high load of appeals, and that we have been able to stay managing. We won't know what that is going to be until this September, but we're optimistic that the level of funding that we have for our staff, we will be able to hold on. We're not jeopardizing any taxes, any assessments, but what we may push some out for a little bit, but we believe that we're still going to be able to keep up with the backlog, waiting for the time when the market does start to return, and that time I'll be back before you asking for positions back. It is a difficult time because we are having to track every year those properties that have declined in value and look at them over and over again. So when we're in this an up market that we saw in the early part of this decade, we are very busy, but not as busy in the down market because, yes, we're still adding value for permits. We're still doing the change of ownerships, but now we're dealing with all the declines in values. And hopefully, I mean, our preliminary data shows that that's stabilizing. So we think we can get through this fiscal year and then hopefully the next, and then we'll have to wait and see what the market, what the real estate market is going to do. The commercial market has taken a big dive this year. But it is a small portion. And all those have to be done by hand by my appraisers. We don't have any type of software to assist us or any type of automation. And those all have to be done by hand. They're upstairs right now diligently working on all of those. And we'll have to see what that market does. We think that we're in good enough shape for this next year. Worst case scenario, we believe that through salary savings, if we have to next year, we may ask for some overtime, but we don't believe we need any more positions for this coming fiscal year.
Along the lines of the, I recognize we're going to take a hit from the commercial standpoint, but do you see another round of a large influx of appeals due to what we're seeing now? The adjustable rate mortgages are going to trigger again.
Possibly on the upper end of the market, but I don't think the lower half of the median we're going to see any. I mean, what we're seeing is that houses, the residential market, they're starting to pencil out for rentals again. So people are starting to purchase these homes for rentals, which is helping to stabilize. First-time home buyers are still having a tough time, and I think that we'll see what happens because a lot of those the federal programs have gone away now for first-time home buyers, tax credits and such. But I do believe that this is still San Luis Obispo County. Everyone still wants to be here. And I do believe that the lower half of the residential market has stabilized, and we're just waiting to see on the upper end. And there could be another round of foreclosure for those million-dollar homes. From what my realtor friends tell me, there's a lot of people living in homes and haven't been paying their mortgages for many, many, many months. But banks are a little bit hesitant to start foreclosure proceedings on these estate-type homes because they don't want the inventory. So that's the big question mark we have, is what's going to happen in that $800,000 million range. Well, a lot of those are coastal homes, as you know. A lot of those are second homes for folks. So that I don't know. That's our big question mark. But I do believe after this year, the commercial industry took a very big hit, and I think that's going to stabilize after this year.
Okay. Do you have your light on, Mr. Grant?
Yes, I did. I just wanted to point out that this is one of those fund centers that we understand does a great deal for the county budget in general. And instead of a 5% decrease like most county departments have taken, it's less than 1% decrease because we worked with the assessor in working out how we could best fund it so that he could do his work that is needed to help us all out.
Thank you, sir.
And we appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Auditor, controller, board.
Did we skip the clerk?
Nope,
not yet.
We're next. Clerk's next.
It's alphabetical, isn't it? That's clever.
Clerk recorder.
All right.
Questions?
Just there how we were budgeting for the special election, and this was written before the Senate election was called. I'm curious as to how we're just going to dig deep. Dig deep and give.
And keep on giving. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Yes, we brought an item back to you. So this is for next fiscal year.
Right.
That's right. I have to get my head in the right one. We did not include it. We did not do come back with an adjustment. We will come back to your board if we do have to have the August 17th election. We'll actually have enough money to pay for that election until we start paying for the November of general election, but we'll come back to your board with an additional funding request. We'll try and cover as much as we can out of our budget, but I'm sure we won't be able to cover the entire cost of it. And hopefully by then we'll know whether or not we're going to get the reimbursement bills through the state legislature.
Is there a target time when we'll know whether that's going to work or not?
Whether
the reimbursement?
With the reimbursement. I've heard various things. As far as I know, I didn't check today, but I think that they're still held up in committee at this point. But at some point, if they're not out there, then it gets tied up in the whole budget process. So I don't really have an answer on that.
Grant? Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks.
And the Treasurer's Office. Okay.
I'll move tentative approval of the items in the fiscal and administrative sections.
Second. It's moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Asajian to approve the fiscal and administrative budgets. Roll call, or all in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Let's move on to support the county departments. Mr. Buckshy. Just hand it to me there, young lady. You're going to get writer's cramp.
Okay, support to county departments, as you can see here, about 6% of the total county budget, and total positions are about 225. There are four positions that are proposed for reduction. Those are in the General Services Agency. Some of the impacts are reduced computer and network support, essentially from Information Technology Department. Should have sufficient resources to adequately maintain it, but not quite the higher level of service that we've been accustomed to. May take a little longer in some cases to respond. Additionally, as we mentioned, as it relates to the General Services Agency and capital projects, maintenance and capital has been scaled back. We're working on the backlog of previously approved projects and not approving very many into the future, and we can talk about that in the capital projects section, but it does impact General Services Agency overall. And then risk management, there is a proposal that has been made by risk management that's included in the proposed budget to spend some money here in the near term in order to improve what's being called the Prevention Loss Initiative, which would avoid in the near term 20 injuries to employees on workers' compensation and eventually grow that number beyond that. There is some upfront cost here in the early years, and the idea is that it would be cost neutral or better 3-4 years down the road, and in the meantime save 20 to 40 injuries per year. So that is included in this budget for your board's consideration. And that concludes the overview.
Okay. Daniels.
This is the last one, I promise. Kim Daniels, Slocia. There's a recommendation in the HR budget to hire a principal human resources analyst to create a loss prevention program at a cost of $360,108. At top salary step, the position of principal HR analyst pays $108,555 a year. Even the weighted rate, which is a combination of salary and benefits, is nowhere near $360,000. So I'd like someone to explain what the balance of that funding is for. Additionally, the proposed budget shows a zero general fund support for this position. That means the cost is coming from somewhere. I'm wondering if it's being passed on to other county departments, which would then in turn increase their costs, or where the funding for this position is coming from. I'd also like to know why we aren't looking internally to see if we have qualified staff to perform this function. We have a county safety officer that does a stellar job for the county. So I'm wondering, questioning why we need to create a new position at such a significant cost. Thank you.
Thank you. Good questions, and we'll get some answers here. Why am I missing 112? Okay, Mr. Grant?
Yes, I was just going to point out that we do have answers to that once you get to the HR department. We, John Schwen, our stellar safety officer, will be step up and give us the information that was requested.
Okay, well, let's just go right down the list here. County Council's Office, General Services.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you. I just have a quick question for County Council. I know there's one position that you've been holding open for the past year or so, and I'm curious to know if you're planning on filling that this next fiscal year.
Yes, Warren Jensen, County Council. Yes, Mr. Grant has given us permission, subject to seeing how the budget situation develops, especially with the state, but we're planning on initiating a recruitment on July 2nd, I believe.
Thank you.
Fleet Services? Repro Graphics? Information Technology? Human Resources?
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Tammy Douglas-Schatz, Human Resources. I want to address some of the questions that Ms. Daniels asked, as well as answer any questions you may have. And I also want John Schwind, our safety officer, to talk about this. The Loss Prevention Initiative is an initiative that he came up with and has been working very hard on. And so I'd like him to talk a little bit about the Loss Prevention Initiative, the cost of that, and then I'll fill in and respond to any questions after that. John, do you want to get us started?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is John Schwinn. I am the county safety officer. I've prepared some slides for you to help describe the loss prevention initiative. I believe the question on the table is, why would we spend $360,000 on an initiative such as this? And I think the answer is the return on investment. I want to really give my applause and commendation to those of you who sat on the board at the time when the revitalization of safety and work compensation programs first occurred. The administrative office at that time, the safety commission, our workers' comp liaisons, all put a lot of work into the program. And you can see the results. There's a tremendous return on investment when we put dollars into safety. Our total comp liabilities, workers' comp liabilities, have been reduced from $18 million to $12.5 million. That's a significant improvement. Our workers' comp charges to departments reduced from $10 million in 2005-06 to $1.6 million this year. In other words, we're charging less than ever to departments for workers' compensation. And the bottom line of the slide there is cut off a bit, but this year, to really explain what that means, this year we will spend $8.4 million less on work-related injuries than we did in 2005-06. And that's extraordinary. That's really an extraordinary return on investment for these programs. Our safety numbers have improved dramatically. The average injury rate, OSHA recordable injury rate for state and local government in California is about 7.6. You can see we've improved from 10.3, which it had hovered at for some time. When we began revitalization in the safety program, we've reduced injuries to 3.8 per 100 employees. So we're almost half the going rate in this state. And that equates to 150 fewer injured employees per year. Again, I think a pretty phenomenal success rate. And I attribute that to the great efforts of our safety commission and others. In terms of dollars, that's always an important thing in the budget times. The return on investment is essentially 4 to 1. For every dollar we spend on safety, we get about $4.10 back. So it's really well worth investing in safety now. And again, the reason I think the loss prevention initiative, the $360,000 that's before you today, is well worth it. There's a lot of opportunity to continue to return gains for the county. You can't put a price on these. Some of the costs, Ms. Daniels did ask what's in the loss prevention initiative besides a position, and it includes things like additional AEDs, automated external defibrillators, those little items that give you a shock when you're having a heart attack. And we've got a couple recent incidents that prove the value of training people in first aid CPR and having these AEDs available. Last year, park rangers at Lopez Lake saved a life with one of these county-provided AEDs, so we'd like to make them more available than they are now. And I think it wasn't just a couple months ago that we had someone here in the board chambers describing how the first aid CPR class they took here in the county permitted them to save a life during an accident on the Cuesta Grade. Safety pays in many ways. I will say, as economic times get tough, our staff, you've heard from other members of the public say how they've never met a county employee who was a slacker, and I agree. And given that we're cutting back the number of employees, our employees, I've noticed, are unwilling to surrender the level of service we're offering. They're working harder and harder. That means they may take shortcuts. My fear is they take it on being safe. And that's something that's really unacceptable. We do not want to see our costs go up again. Next slide, please. So the Loss Prevention Initiative is a safety initiative. Its intent is to return, again, more dollars on the original investment. And it's really just an allocation shift. Right now, we spend about 96% of our budget on reaction and 4% on prevention, and we hope to shift that. So why do we need this now? Even though our injury rate has been going down, it's going down at a slower rate. It's essentially level off. We still do have injured employees. We're going to run into about 100 injured employees this year. That's 100 too many. Even though we've reduced it by 150, there's still 150 employees. We'll end up, 100 injuries this year that we'll end up with. And medical costs are rising. So we are actually, as our injury rate reduction flattens, our costs will go up because medical costs are rising. And there is opportunity to save money here. Ergonomic-related injuries is something we haven't focused on heavily. And they're a huge percentage of our injuries and a large percentage of our cost. The Loss Prevention Initiative has a lot of dollars dedicated to that issue. So if you can, I'll show you the example on ergonomics. Presently, if an employee complains of discomfort due to their workstation setup or something else they're doing that affects the ergonomics of their work function, the department hires an ergonomic evaluator to do an evaluation. The department buys the appropriate equipment to fix that employee's workstation. And we have to fix them medically. And these are not cheap claims, running about $8,229 per employee. Additionally, we've lost that employee in terms of their productivity. If we were to look under the Loss Prevention Initiative, risk management would actually take on the cost of ergonomic evaluations for departments, so we'd be saving dollars for the departments. Risk management would buy any workstation improvements that are necessary. And we will avoid the medical costs altogether, or at least minimize them. So this is a tremendous benefit to departments. Risk management, the bulk of the $360,000 that's before you today, is to pay for that ergonomic equipment, get those evaluations done, and prevent these injuries. So the average cost, in this case, $1,033 per employee, it's a lot cheaper than $8,229, so we think it's a worthwhile investment. With the Loss Prevention Initiative, again, to the question of what does that $360,000 buy, instead of doing about 40 preventative ergo evals we do now, we're going to get up to around 300. We'll be buying the equipment necessary to improve workstations, that's part of the $360,000. Additional AEDs, some enhanced first aid CPR training. This should provide for a little more security in our government facilities here as well. Wellness health screenings. The wellness program is down to really little or no money support at this time, so the loss prevention will support that as well. And what it costs, again, really, it's not so much a cost as a shift in allocation. All this money comes from the internal service fund that funds worker compensation. So this is money that had been reserved to pay for the medical costs of injured employees. And we're just shifting this resource. Instead of having that fund sit there and pay for injuries, we're going to use some of it to pay for the prevention of injuries. The balance is still tremendously to the reactive side. As you note on the slide here, we're still 85% of that fund still goes to reaction to industries, and this proposal brings us up to all of 15% preventative. So no new funds, we're just kind of shifting the funds available in the reaction fund, if you will, the reserves for workers' compensation towards prevention. I think that's it on the slides. Ultimately, the loss prevention initiative's cost is a reduction in the confidence limit in that internal service fund. So actuaries want to make sure we have enough in that fund to fund all of our liabilities. The impact would be about 1.5%, maybe 2% to the confidence limit in that fund. And this is actually still well above the target that CSAC sets for us at around 75% confidence limit. So we still have enough cushion to absorb liabilities. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Just quickly, I know that one of the questions that was raised is the dollar amount for a human resources analyst. And I don't know what a human resources analyst does, and obviously it must be complicated because it pays so much. Is there an opportunity to cross-train or do something internally that can accomplish that as opposed to this type of a salary for an analyst?
Sure. That's a good question. Well, first of all, the analyst staff that's assigned to risk management do several things. They do workers' comp, risk management, liability program, and then we have an analyst, John, himself in the safety program. So a principal level analyst was determined to be needed, which is the highest level analyst, because we don't have that position in the risk management function at all. We're all trying to cross-train, but someone has to be responsible for all of these programs operating together and cross-training together. So rather than bringing in a low-level analyst for such a important position where we're trying to save money, we want to have a position that's allocated at a higher level so that they're managing all of the risk management functions collaboratively. There's nothing in that position that requires it to be filled from the outside. We just don't have the proper level in our position allocation at this time. So the principal level is what's needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to take a little closer look at the numbers and how this is meant to pay itself back. So first of all, I'm on page D320, you know, where the budget augmentation request, the description and the intended results are. $360,000, is that imagined to be an ongoing yearly expense at that level?
It is. It's going to be roughly that amount ongoing.
Okay.
Correct.
And in a conversation with admin, I'd understood that salary and benefits for the position was $140,000, or is it more, or is it less?
That's
right.
About correct for the
right
position.
$140,000.
Yes.
And then we're going to be doing wellness. We'd started a wellness program a while back. It has sort of gone in suspension for a while. Ballpark, putting on the extra health. I mean, I'm just trying to get a breakdown of what else comes out of that 360.
Yeah, out of the 360, there's about $10,000 that we dedicated to wellness.
Okay.
So it's less than 10% of the pilot program that had been approved some years back.
Okay.
That pilot program was left to expire. So we're trying to cobble some amount of a wellness program together with all of $10,000.
Okay.
About 180
$1,000 of that will go towards ergonomic equipment.
Okay.
And this is an important point to make. Presently, since departments buy the equipment that their employees need, they don't get any particular volume discount. We're not buying that much of it. By combining this centrally, we can save a lot of money on the equipment we buy and furnish equipment for a lot of employees for considerably cheaper than...
But I make that at somewhere less than $1,000 a workstation,
correct.
$800 or so.
Correct. Presently, it's around $1,000. We think we can pull it off for at least 20% cheaper than that if we combine it.
And again, in a not a reactive but a forward-looking
preventative,
preventative mode.
Correct.
Okay. And then is money separately budgeted for the ergonomic evaluations, or is that part of the principal?
That's part of the position. Part of the position. So there's other smaller amounts of money, about $5,000 going towards security. There are other special projects that have smaller numbers on them. Indoor environmental control is something that's really important. I respond to a lot of sick building complaints in county facilities, and having a renewed focus on how we use chemicals. There's an issue that involves the Ag Department. A change in a position there results in pest management being sort of distributed amongst departments, and I want to make sure we don't have little cans of rage showing up in the in our
say no more
workplace. So smaller amounts of money for each of those.
All right. So then going back to what we expected to save, and I asked the question in the early going, you know, that we had already lowered workers' comp by $1.5 million, and Mr. Buckshy was saying that's about half. But I noticed in one of your slides that you have charges to departments have come down to about $1.5 million, which seems... But then you have claims paid, and so the money that we're trying to save is out of that claims paid. I'm trying to see if there's, you know, how high does the fruit hang here, and how big a pot are we trying to shrink by doing this?
Sure, and I don't know if it's helpful to have the slides back up there again, but historically we've charged departments as much as $10 million to fund our internal fund, to pay for injuries, if you will, for the management of those injuries. We've reduced those charges to about $1.6 million in the proposed budget.
Okay, and where does the, if you'll allow me to jump in, where does the $11 million, I mean, so we're paying out $12.5 million a year in injury, in workers' comp claims? Is that it right now?
We had been. The amount that we've spent each year on injuries has come down as we've reduced the number of injuries, and that's what permits us to do the things that we're describing here. So, for example, we can charge only $1.6 million this year because the pressure on the reserve fund has been decreased as we've reduced the number of injuries.
It's an actuarial calculation.
So, yes. So, so we're down to probably spending closer to $3 million a year or less on injuries, whereas we were spending $10 million just not that many years ago. So,
So the payments are out of this. Total comp liabilities is a fund, is like a reserve. It's not what we're paying every
year. It's one of our internal service funds, yes.
Okay.
So these charges to departments are like premiums that we charge departments to make sure we have sufficient reserve to pay for the injuries that might result.
So here's where I'm going, is the staff report, the budget indicates that it's going to be cost neutral in 2 to 4 years, but that still would mean that we're out 2 to 4 years of that $140,000 salary, give or take whatever savings we realize in the first year. But how does that get paid back? Do we continue a trend that actually in the end makes that whole?
Yes, I believe we continue the trend in injury reduction that results in less and less pressure on the internal service fund, resulting in less and less charges to departments to pay to beef up the reserve. And as we'll have less need for a larger fund, we can charge departments even less year to year. So that's how this plays out. So,
got it.
Thank you, Jensen.
I believe there's one fact that may be confusing here, and you have total comp liabilities going from $18 million to $12.5 million. Is that a multi-year or sort of an accrued multi-year liability, or is that what's paid out in a particular year?
Yeah, and I guess that may be what's confusing. So the liabilities are the amount that an actuary determines that we would have to, if everything came due right now, we'd have about $18 million, well, right now we're about $12.5 million this year, about $12.5 million worth of medical payments and other costs. If it all happened right now, if everyone who was injured had to be paid right now for their injuries,
Known injuries or
known injuries. In other words, what we have right now on the books, if because we have some folks who were who have been injured sufficiently that we know we've got medical care for them many years into the future. So, but if we had to pay all of that cost right now, that would be about $12.5 million. Now, we don't spend that every year, but that's our ultimate liability. So those liabilities have been brought down from around $18 million down to around $12.5 million. On an annual basis, we've spent as much as $10 million in 1 year. In other words, you can imagine how different costs were to departments then. But now we're spending less than three million.
So let me do some simple math. At let's take $300,000 a year because eventually refitting workstations should go away. Are we going to be spending $180,000 a year for the foreseeable?
I hope we're not doing it forever, but
that's a lot of workstations.
We have about 2,500 employees. Many of them have ergonomic related impacts to their workstation, and so over time, those workstations they're sitting at just wear out, break down. Employees need to be reevaluated. So for some period of time, we will be purchasing equipment.
Okay, let's say we spend $1 million in equipment over 5 to 7 years or something
right.
like that. And over 5 years, we'll spend another $700,000. So let's say we're out $2 million before this goes cost neutral on us, right? We're only charging departments $1.6 million. So to recoup that, we'd have to drive that down to a very, very small number, right? That's the savings comes out of the $1.6 million in charges. Correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm following your hypothetical as I'd like to.
I guess the problem I have is I don't quite understand. We're looking at having accrued $12.5 million of liabilities right now, if that's
right.
That's it. How fast are we accruing liabilities? I mean, we should be able to find it out of here by looking at the average times the number of injuries we get, right?
Right, and we're accruing it in terms of total cost, as I say, somewhere around the neighborhood of $2.8 million per year worth of liability is being added. Typically, we fund our reserve equal to about what we expect to pay out in a given year. The point of this year's reduction in charges and this safety initiative is we believe we can actually bring those charges down so far as that they do become cost neutral.
And you have an estimate of just, I mean, if we're charging 1.6 a year, what's your goal there?
Again, I think 3-4 years out, we become cost neutral. As we shift, again, more dollars shift from prevention, from reaction to prevention.
But do the charges to department go down?
Sure, they can go down. I'm not envisioning them going down immediately next year. They'll probably be about the same next year, and possibly the year after that. But at that point, then, what we're spending per year will be equal to what we're charging per year. And the ultimate amount in the reserve then would be actually overfunded, and we can bring charges down again.
Okay.
If I may, just to add to that, yeah, the idea is if it were, for argument's sake, say it continues at the $350,000 for the next few years, the goal would be to bring the 1.6 down to roughly 1.2 million or so on an ongoing basis. And, you know, this fund works similar to like a pension system, anything where there's an actuarial liability where an actuary is making an estimate of ultimately what's going to be owed and what you need to fund on a yearly basis in order to pay off that ultimate liability. Same scenario applies here. What's being proposed is ways to reduce costs to reduce the overall liability, therefore the annual charges would be reduced.
And then in theory, and this would be my last assertion, then it would seem that where we're going to really save, besides prevention and preventing injuries and keeping employees from getting injured, is that hopefully the cost of doing the prevention is rising much less than the cost of the medical care on the backside.
Sure.
Got it.
The Grim Reaper would like to weigh in just for a second. I was a part of this recommendation to, not for the loss prevention program, but for the lowering of the charges this year to the departments, which is one of the things that is helping balance the budget that you've got in front of you. And I would say it's not reasonable to expect to go below the 1.6 million charges for quite some time, because that itself is less right now, substantially less than we will be spending this year. We had a reserve that was built up of about 8, I think, something like that. So last year and this year and probably next year, the plan is to charge less than the real cost is as a way of helping the budget. So to go below 1.6 would be great news, but 1.6 is already pretty low for an organization of this size, and a great achievement to be able to do that, to, in my view.
So, Mr. Sivak, if I might, then the request for this principal human resources analyst, do you, by what you just suggested, is that going to enhance our ability to drop below that any further, in your opinion?
I can't comment on that. I wasn't involved.
I'm having a hard time.
The organizational study that somebody else had.
Okay.
I can try to, if I wasn't clear enough, I guess I can try to answer that a little bit better. Well, first of all, if we didn't have an additional position in-house, we would use consultants to do ergonomic assessments. It's very common. It's a specialty. And one thing that our program doesn't have is an ergonomic prevention program. Most counties have them because it's typically considered low-hanging fruit when it comes to reducing injuries. And so as great as a job as our work comp program has done, that has been one hole in the program. So typically, you go out and get ergonomic assessment experts to come in. Well, we didn't want to do that. We'd rather do it in-house, because if we do it in-house, we can spend about the same kind of money as it would take to get a consultant, but I get more work out of them if they come in-house, because I get some, if I have a principal, they can be responsible for coordinating an entire program, which includes work comp, liability, and then this loss prevention initiative, as well as our safety program, and manage that, as well as getting loss prevention initiative off the ground. You know, risk management works better when it's all working together, and we're already helping departments spend less on risk management, and this was my assessment of the best way to continue in that decline for everybody, is to bring that, the management of that program, and then the management of risk management in-house with that position.
When you hire a consultant to do this ergonomic assessment, how often do you have to do that?
Well, you know, if you're doing it reactively, you only do it very infrequently. What we want to do is we want to do it proactively, and John, you can help me with the numbers, but we want to spend as much as we have in the budget, doing as many workplace assessments and getting the proper equipment in as we can. Can you help me with a number on that, John?
Yeah, I think, again, presently we do only about 40 preventative ergo evaluations a year, and we're injuring 43 to 95, and it depends on how you define ergonomic-related injury, 43 to 95 employees a year in ergonomic-related injuries. So we're paying for only 40 preventative ones, but as many as 95 injuries from ergonomic-related impacts. And the injuries cost us $8,229 on average each. The prevention stuff, if we do it in-house, costs us $1,033 per employee. We're spending considerably more injuring these folks, not to mention the fact that then we have people who are out of work, we're hiring temporaries, or using temporary labor, or having other employees work OT, to cover for the work that's not being done. It's a substantially cheaper to spend the dollars on prevention than it is on reaction.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions at this point, Mr. Patterson?
Well, just a comment, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, if we actually move forward with this program, we'll certainly have an opportunity over time to see if it's cost-effective. Probably within a year, we'll know if it's penciling out the way it's anticipated.
So by the same token, if you do that and it doesn't work out, what do you do with that person? Mr. Grant?
Yes, thank you, Jim Grant. Well, what we do is determine whether or not the program has worked, or if it hasn't worked, then we will make adjustments accordingly, which could be just as much as removing that position if it doesn't work. This We track all these budget augmentation requests. They're in the budget, and every year we do track them in terms of what results were intended. And if those intended results aren't being met, we go back and we'll take a look at it and determine if we need to make adjustments to the program or eliminate this program altogether. I'm not adverse to doing that as we go through it. But as
we went through this discussion, it seemed to me that the payback to this would be a pretty long period of time.
It could
be. And so how are you going to track this on a yearly basis to determine?
The way we track it is the amounts of injuries that are prevented at this point in time, and the amount of safety, the much as we look into the safety issues at the time. And
it's actually really easy to track this, but part might interrupt. Because our workers' comp statistics are kept in like 10 miscellaneous different ways, and we'll be able to see whether our costs are going down. We can obviously track the number of injuries. That's the easiest thing to do. But we'll be able to see whether we have a cost impact on the program halfway through the year and by the end of the year rather easily. So I will say, in as much as I know the question on the table is, will this pay off? I gave a presentation on how to do safety to my fellow county safety officers in this state, and none of them thought it could be done, and that's because we had an injury rate equal to theirs, and they thought it couldn't be done better. But we have an injury rate now superior to all theirs, and it can be improved beyond that. I know what it takes to get it done, and I believe the Loss Prevention Initiative will pay off in spades. Again, it's a 4-to-1 ratio. For this investment, I actually expect we can save enough money that we will charge departments less than the $1.6 million we do now. I'm pretty confident in that.
Gibson? Yeah, a number of questions. On the 4-to-1 ratio, a dollar, what's the basis of that statistic?
So that's the difference between the number of injuries we have now and those we've had in the past times the average cost per injury.
But that's not on the basis of this program.
Right, but that's, in other words, I know that in the prospectus they tell you past performance doesn't
guarantee
future results.
Yeah, you sounded a little...
But it does give you some idea of what safety initiatives typically pay off. National Safety Council actually has done an extensive study, and they found that typically the payoff for safety investment dollars is 6-to-1. So in that sense, you could say we could do better, actually. But
And it's noted here that this is not a general fund proposal. So the fund that this comes out of, and again, help me with the statistics here. We have $12.5 million in accrued liabilities.
Correct.
We have a much larger self-insurance fund, I would assume.
Correct.
And it's from that larger fund that we are going to draw...
Correct.
And how big is that?
The fund right now is a balance of around $24 million.
Okay, so we're pulling $360,000 out of a $24 million fund to shift the cost from paying claims out of that fund to preventing further accruals and liabilities.
Right, the idea is to spend $360,000 of that $24 million on preventing injuries so as to reduce the liabilities in the future for that fund.
Okay. So, and how often do we do actuarials on that?
Actually, there's an official actuarial done by Bickmore Associates on an annual basis.
So that should be another way of tracking how
Correct.
We're doing on this.
Correct.
And the actuarial number that says that this is what you should maintain is what?
Presently, the actuary recommended we spend $3.31 million this year. In other words, I should put it this way. We should have charged departments $3.31 million this year to pay for the injuries we expect this year. That was when they did the actuary. They prepared it actually started around last year this time. It was prepared and final in November. We've actually seen injury reductions this year sufficient to say that our cost this year will be around $2.5 million to $2.8 million. So we've actually, because of injury reduction efforts, we've actually reduced the cost of injuries in advance of what the actuary predicted.
So going back to the intro to the whole budget, when we showed that we thought it was going to be worse than $17 million, but $1.5 million was the reduction in charges on workers' comp, that's really a one-time move, isn't it?
Well,
because we are under what the actuary says we should be accruing?
Well, we are under because we are... The fund is well funded,
right?
So we can afford to reduce the rates to departments. We did it for this current fiscal year, cut it in half, and the next year it's cut in half as well. And assuming that we do as well as we do, have been doing,
then it might not have.
We may not have to raise them up even the year after that. So there'll be a time where the fund is depleted somewhat, and the charges we'll have to probably inch up to meet that. But that's quite some time away.
I'm trying to figure the baseline against which we should measure these savings.
You know, I think it would be on the annual basis. If the cost of the program is $360,000, let's track the charges. Whatever the baseline is, it ought to be $360,000 left. As the actuary said, we should have charged $3 million. We only charged $1.6 million. Next year, the actuary hopefully would say we only owe $2.7 million or $2.6 million as opposed to $3
million. Okay.
So going back to the question that Ms. Daniels asked in regard to this isn't coming out of the general fund, where is it coming from? You just answered that in terms of the...
It's coming from that internal service fund, the workers' compensation internal service fund, which is I'll use the term loosely, overfunded right now, but that's what gives us the opportunity.
It's overfunded. We could use some of that.
That is actually part of the budget balancing equation, is that
we're looking for more. I mean, if they have any more.
Each year. I do want to make one clarifying point, though. All departments are charged this. All general fund departments are paying into it. All other fund departments are paying into this as well. So they are paying in. I want to make that perfectly clear. But the less they pay in, the more they like it.
Right.
Okay. I have no other questions this time. Thank you both. Risk management? Pretty much covered that. Self-insurance? Pretty much did that too. Any other questions on the support to county departments? I entertain a motion for approval on that. Tentative motion.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Gibson for a tentative motion on the support to county departments. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, let's move into financing.
Bear with me for just a second. Okay, financing. I think this is a relatively easy one. There are no people or programs, so to speak, in this. This houses the number of the financing mechanisms, debt service, automation funds, non-departmental revenue and the like, small percentage of the budget, about 3%. Service level impacts, as we talked earlier, as part of the short-term measures, we are redirecting a portion of the depreciation to the operating budget to help stave off further program and service level reductions. And then also, as previously mentioned, this does reflect the program by the Auditor Controller's Office to invest the retiree health care fund in a trust to earn a higher rate of interest than what it's earning in the county treasury. Therefore, we can reduce charges by 30%, or roughly $800,000.
Okay. I was going to ask Ms. Daniels if she'd like to speak. Okay. No public comment. I see board questions. Want to go through these? Any questions on any of them? Mr. Seabach, do you have questions on any of them?
I would ask your indulgence to let me make one comment.
You sure can.
Okay. Jerry Seabach, Auditor Controller. This really isn't on your sheet, but it doesn't, if it belongs anywhere, I want to talk about the estimate of the carryover fund balance. Part of the funding for next year's budget is always what we estimate is going to be left over from the year before. And we make that estimate as closely as we can, but it's done, you know, around March. And the administrative office works in April and puts a proposed budget out in early May. We have a number of $10 million in the budget. And now that is an estimate of that, what that carryover. And always, we don't know. There can be things that could be to the good and to the bad. So it may not be. In fact, it isn't going to be exactly $10 million. But this year, I'm a little worried. I just wanted to let you know so that when it happens in August and I come back and it's not $10 million, that you'll remember maybe that Jerry said he was worried about it. Since we made the estimate of the $10 million, the things that I know about that have happened are not on the good side. For example, unexpectedly, we had to take $500,000 out of contingency for the public defender. Extra election in June 22nd, extra election is a couple hundred thousand. That wasn't anticipated. There's been a few other things that I know about on the downside, and I don't really know much on the good side. The tax roll will be fortunate if it comes in right at the estimate. It might not even quite make the estimate. So I don't think we're going to have a lot of extra money. In fact, I mean, I'll be crossing my fingers, just hoping we get close to the $10 million for the fund balance when it finally books close. There are still some things that could happen to the good. For, you know, one year the state decided unexpectedly to pay some bills in June that we couldn't believe. If you remember, the governor was touting that he was tearing up the check or the credit cards again or something, and all of a sudden handed us $5 million, but I don't think that's going to happen this year. Especially when you get to Wednesday, don't have it in the back of your mind that CBOC always got some extra money hidden away somewhere. It's pretty much not there. You've seen it here today. Yeah. Turn my pockets inside out.
Jerry, when you're making those assumptions, I know we've got a pretty sizable amount of money that relative to the elections. Do you take into consideration the possibility of the state paying back if the legislation's passed to do so, or is it just kind of a wish list because we don't know when that would happen?
Well, the clerk has in the clerk's budget for next year some estimate of reimbursement. We did, neither she nor we knew there was going to be two extra elections occurring. So that cost is known. I mean, we know we're going to have to pay for it. Whether it ever gets paid back or not is a question. So the cost of the June 22nd extra election is what I'm talking about right here. I think she asked for 180 or something. You had the item a couple weeks ago, 180 extra, 180 aid or something. And if that gets paid back next year, that would be a boon for next year.
If I can, just to add to that briefly on fund balance available, we might have mentioned this in the past, but I think it's worth repeating. Fund balance available is undoubtedly the most complex line item in the budget in order of to calculate. It is the result of the variation between budget and actual for every revenue line item and every expenditure item in the budget, and there are thousands of line items in the budget when you look at all the different funds and fund centers. And so the auditor's office, and we work with them as well, to try to calculate that, come up with the best estimate possible, but as Mr. Seebach noted, it is just that, it is an estimate, and then we'll get the actual figures at year end. So there is always some variation. I think last year might have been one of the most accurate of all time. It was within about $200,000 of estimate.
If you think about now, general fund is $350 million or something.
360. Yeah.
So 1% error in that is $3.6 million. And now, as Everett Dirksen said, you know, you start to talk about real money. You know, million here, million there. So we would hate it to be $3.6 million off on the low side. I wouldn't be so bad on the high side. But I don't think it'll be that much. I think we did a good job in the departments. We work with each of the departments individually to try to hone down that estimate. But some of them, like, they're a little cagey with us. They don't want us knowing how much they have in their sack still.
That's
super
cagey.
They kind of hide it. It's like they're playing poker with the car. But in the end, my staff works really hard on it, but we are still months out. When we make that estimate, we have to put something down in the budget, and it's months out. And we know some bad things have happened this time.
Okay. Any questions on the financing budgets? Entertain a tentative motion on those. Move approval.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Hill. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Move over to the
last up. Capital and maintenance projects, you can see here, about a half of 1% of the total budget. This is down considerably from prior years, especially during the boom times. Limited new capital projects, reduced maintenance of facilities, as we've mentioned, intentional strategies. Really, the only capital projects that are really approved in this budget are really true infrastructure upgrades. For example, redoing the heating and cooling in the computer data center. It's outdated. There was funding through the EECBG or the Energy Efficiency Block Grant to do that sort of thing, to upgrade it to reduce costs. It's being done with grant funded primarily, and is a basic infrastructure need. Another example of one of the few capital projects is replacing a public safety radio tower out at the county jail to ensure that critical public safety communications can improve. A number of our communication towers are aging and will likely need to be replaced in future years, and this is one of the first that we're looking to replace. Other than that, the capital maintenance projects are few and far between.
Thank you, sir. Questions? Just, Mr. Gibson, just a small one. I see, and this is really micro detail on E3, I see the cover, parking cover structure at the Templeton substation. Have we thought about putting photovoltaics on top of that?
That is, it is a good question, and that actually is one of the primary locations that organizations are looking at. And as part of the overall energy retrofit that General Services is looking at, yeah, they will be looking at that.
Thanks. Would that be funded out of this budget, or do we have our EECBG or any?
I believe that's part of the EECBG plan as part of the retrofit. This just pays for the basic structure at this point.
Great. Okay. I think that pretty much concludes it. I need a tentative motion on this one.
So moved.
Second. By Supervisor Sajjan, second by Supervisor Gibson. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Do we need a tentative motion on the entire?
I think that I don't believe you have to. You've done that already. You'll bring it back Wednesday morning.
Let's bring it
morning,
back for the okay.
Finalize the go through the contributions to other agencies, and then you can do a final tentative, and then we can bring it back at that point next week for the final resolution.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll be Wednesday morning. We'll go into the community-based organizations and as well as closed session. On that day.
That's correct. We'll look tomorrow.
So you won't be meeting tomorrow. I just wanted that on the record.
No. Thank you, gentlemen.
We're adjourned until Wednesday at 9 o'clock.
I am.
Thanks.